following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Today's Corolla Classics is brought to you by LifeLock. Increase cybersecurity attacks on pharmaceutical workers' phones and tablets as they work from home. They have sensitive medical data and it could be exposed, so it's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting all of our lives. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet, we might not even know it. Cybercriminals around the world keep finding new ways to steal identities, and you could miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit. So good thing there's LifeLock. It detects a wide range of identity threats, like, for instance, your social security number being for sale on the dark web. And if they detect that your information has potentially been compromised, LifeLock sends you an alert. Tell them about it, Gio.
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Hello and welcome back to Corolla Classics for Sunday, January 10th, 2021. You know how the show goes. We'll play you some Adam Corolla show highlights. A little highlight reel of over, 12 years of podcasting.
Yeah, Adam messed it up already this year.
Look, we've been doing it too long. We're at that point where it's like,
you just messed up the nomenclature a little bit. It's coming up on the 12th year, or the 12 year anniversary, starting the 13th year.
Gio, we will never get that right. So, I'm sorry.
I had to carve it in my forearm.
All right. Well, as I said, Gio's here. Super fan Giovanni. My name's Chris Loxamana. And let's get started with the show. First off, we teased it yesterday. Greg Fitzsimmons was on the second episode of the new or the current Corolla Show format.
And we're doing his thing where he gets in early. So yeah. Even though this one was recorded in June, he made sure to be one of the first guests.
Not only does he get in early in the year, Gio, but he always comes early whenever he's scheduled to come on the show.
So we've talked about this. Yeah. He's very Robert Schimmel.
If I tell him to come on at 1:30, he'll come in at 1:05, 1:10, and kind of just hang. So we always bring him in early because Adam doesn't like to just keep his guests.
I think that's
waiting.
Also a tactic.
It might be a tactic, but we never mind. Because
he does the hangdog face outside the window. Like, yeah.
He always comes into the engineering room, greets us, and it's almost so him and Adam can make eye contact when he comes in. But we love it.
I wish you guys would like one day and like interrogate Greg on air. Be like, hey Greg, why do you do these moves? He's got to have a reason. I want to hear him explain it.
Oh, man. So even his most recent appearance on the show, which a couple days ago, I told him to zoom in at 1:30. We're going to start the show and then bring him in 30 minutes later. He zoomed in at 1:05. And that's why Adam started the show. Greg's already here? And I said, yeah. And then we just let him in. And we didn't mind because he was a great contributor.
It was like a Zoom Brady Bunch moment when his face popped up. I remember I saw it. I was like, I was watching. Yeah. I was watching the video of it.
I love it.
Hilarious. He had this facial expression like, I'm here.
Well, let's listen to a clip of one of my favorite Adam Carolla Show guests, Greg Fitzsimmons.
3:34, the second half. This is, again, Greg Fitzsimmons, Teresa Strasser, Brian Bishop, June of 2010. Interview with Greg, more news, you get a Q&A, a caller calls in about the director of Birdemic, and they go over that interview a little bit, and it's quite hilarious. And then towards the end of the show, Adam delivers one of his funniest quotes ever from the POV of his mom about being married to his dad. Adam Carolla Show 3:34, check it out.
Andrew. Hey Adam, love the show.
Thanks Andrew, what's going on?
Got a quick question for you. So I think it's really interesting when you have the big stars in there because everybody's curious about them and feels like they know them. But it's also interesting when you have some of the not as well-known stars because they're generally interesting and funny and maybe trying to make a better impression than a big star.
Yeah, Greg Fitzsimmons coming in a minute to prove that point.
Right.
Right.
So I was curious if you get pissed at your booker or you're just generally unhappy when someone who is not a big star and is really not that interesting comes in. A good example would be the director/writer of the instant classic Birdemic movie.
Birdemic, that cat was good because, I mean, he fits my criteria of a good guest because it was horrible and the movie was horrible. And that's what you want. What you don't want is the middle in anything. You want really bad or really good. And he was really bad. You know, when it's like a song. You want a song to be so bad that it's actually entertaining. versus like, eh, or you want it to kick ass.
Yeah.
But you never want to live in the middle. The middle's no fun at all. And Birdemic and the guy, I can't remember the guy who did it, but I remember a couple things. I explained to him, he was from like Vietnam or something, and he was explaining to me that these birds of prey, these hawks and these vultures, they come down and start attacking citizens in a beach town. And I said, well, I don't think a vulture is a bird of prey. I think it's a scavenger. And he was like, pretty sure it's a bird of prey.
Oh, no.
And then I was like, pretty sure it's a scavenger, technically. Vultures don't take down animals. They just pick at their carcasses. And he said, pretty sure it's a bird of prey. And we looked it up, and it was a scavenger. So I fucked with this whole movie premise.
Wait,
that
is this one of these movies that's so bad that it actually is a cult classic and people go to see it?
I think this one might be too bad to be a cult classic, but the point is I think the fact that he's serious about it, it's sort of like the, was it William Hung?
Yeah, from American Idol.
Yeah. It's James Wynn, I think is his name, or whatever. Whatever it is. But the point is this. When someone is horrible about it but sincere, that's what you want. So he's a bad example because he was so bad that he was good.
I'm trying to think of someone who is truly uninteresting, and even the guy who wrote a book on where to get sushi. Now, one could argue that is not a great booking.
Right.
He was a nice man.
Yeah.
Well, I just remember there was a great moment when you basically said that his special effects like really sucked, and did he mean them to be kind of campy, and he was totally lost and thought they were like the greatest special effects ever.
Well, you know, look, if I'd found out that he'd spent, $10 million on Birdemic, I would have beaten him with a folding chair. But the fact that he spent like $80,000 on it or whatever it was, as sort of, I give the guy a pass. Let's put it that way. I don't mind weird guests, and I don't mind even what you would think would be a bad booking. What I mind is lazy guests. Sometimes you get it with hot chicks. Hot chicks don't dance. They just don't burn calories. They just sometimes will just sit there and be like,
don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
Yeah.
An expert that doesn't have any expertise.
Who was that bitch?
She was somebody who had a lot of MySpace friends.
Yeah, and she wrote some sort of... She was
dating advice?
She was going to give out dating advice, and we were talking to her. This was on the radio show.
She had the hair with the cheetah pattern or something, right? She had some crazy hairdo.
She was
horrible. And I just said, like, well, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to some guy who was out dating? And she was like,
oh, God.
Christine Dolce, yeah. And she was like, be a one-upper. And I was like, you should be a one-upper? No. Don't be a one-upper. It's like I said. I love when people fuck up and then correct you.
Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
Hey, cunt, you didn't say that before. You said be a one-upper. That's why I was asking.
She had a lot of glitter on, which is weird first thing in the morning.
Oh, fucking, her brain was the size of a squirrel's. And like, I love this idea. She's going to give me fucking tips on dating. So her...
And I said, what else?
What other pearls of wisdom do you have for our single gents that are listening? She's like, don't be a one-upper. And by the way,
I don't even know what that means.
What the fuck does that mean? So don't be a one-upper to the chick?
Or to other guys?
So I go to you like, what do you do?
I'm a school teacher.
I'm an ambassador to Persia.
I don't like being one-up.
Yeah.
Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
But
Persia?
I don't know.
I don't think that country exists anymore.
I've seen the movie.
What the fuck?
That's why my job...
It's so important that it doesn't even exist.
Doesn't matter. I'm old school.
You're an ambassador.
I'm a legacy. Now, here's the deal. But what are you supposed to do? So I go like this. So don't be a one-upper. So I go, oh, hey, what do you do for a living?
I'm a teacher.
Oh. I work at the coin-op laundromat, putting those mini things of Tide into the vending machine. You hot now? Your panties wet? I didn't one-up you. I have a shittier job than you.
Wait, that's what you're supposed to do?
Yeah, what the fuck kind of advice is that? Don't be a one-upper?
To be fair, it was a good concept that she was too high to understand. She was having a problem.
Do you think it is a good concept?
Well, it was. She was promoting, like, acts or something, like the game killers. Things not to do when you're a wingman or something. And don't be a one-upper to your buddy when he's trying to pick up a chick or something.
Which is
kind of interesting or clever or whatever, but she was like, don't be a one-upper. Like, she couldn't grasp what
be a one-upper. Yeah. Wait, don't be a one-upper?
To be fair, yeah, like, she'd probably... went to bed about four in the morning, probably underneath a couple NBA. But like the sixth man for the Sacramento Kings was probably pounding the shit out of her all night. Then she tried to make it up with a couple of low-cal Red Bulls before
she
came in.
Yeah, she had a couple sugar-free Red Bulls.
Let me tell you something about the brain. When you have that fucking little Cox engine for a brain, like when you have... Here's the thing. When you're Teresa and you have a nice size brain shoved into your skull, or Bull Brian, or myself, pretty good power plant in there. And what we can do is get almost no sleep and punch down a couple cups of coffee and slap a little water on our face and kind of get our shit together for a 10-minute radio interview. But when you have that pop gun for a fucking brain, you can't do it.
There's no room for error when you're Christina Dolce.
Too early for her.
It was way too early. She had on the night before's glitter.
Oh, she was such a bitch.
Possibly meth.
Oh, God.
She was not kind. But what
don't
about
be a one-upper. No, as I said, no, not to.
You know who I felt bad for besides us was the junior exec at the ad agency who was like, hey, I got this hot chick we can use to endorse our products. She's great. She'll go on all the radio shows.
Yeah.
And took him out advice.
Here we are 3 years later. We still make fun of her.
So hot.
Yeah, we're still talking about
what
it.
A bitch.
What about Vita Guerra? Big booty queen.
She was another fucking brainless
she
bitch.
She was on twice.
Yeah.
She was?
Yes.
I think we had to try to figure out how fucking bad she was the first time. Like, we had to bring her back just to plumb her depths of horribleness.
I still don't know why she's famous, but she was.
She's got a
really
fat ass, and Mexicans love fat asses.
It's juicy.
Lowrider magazines.
She does have a juicy ass.
She has a juicy ass. Yeah. Hey, Mark.
What's happening, Ace?
What's happening, Mark?
Juicy asses. I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, quick question for you, man.
Yeah.
Realizing as a parent, you love both your kids equally.
Mm.
What I want to know is, as of today, which one of the twins
is your prefer? Wow. Listen, my daughter's starting to piss me off. First off, my wife has an attractive friend named Jody, and she was over at the house the other day. And somehow when someone's good-looking, it makes everything more embarrassing.
Yeah, it's true.
That's unfortunate, but when people are ugly, you're like, who cares? They see me vomit on myself or do whatever. But when they're hot, it gets a little more embarrassing.
Yeah, Jan's single, Jody.
Jody's good-looking blonde, and she's sitting there. And I'm trying to get my kids to cuddle with me, to come into bed and cuddle with me, you know?
Snuggie.
I like to cuddle. And my son, it's really weird because as bitchy as my daughter is, my son is sweet. Like, they both have their separate beds. And a couple nights ago, I went to climb in to Natalia's bed, and I said, I'm going to lie down with you, Natalia, and give you a little cuddle before you go to bed. And she said, no, get away, get away. And she pushes me, and she's fucking with me, you know, get away, get away. And I hear this little voice, it's Sonny's voice, coming from the other side of the room. He's on his bed, and he said, Daddy, I'll love you.
Oh, my
and I went,
God.
You little shit, you're getting a bicycle and college.
And a motorcycle.
Yeah, have fun at Pierce, bitch. so I got out of bed. I went and cuddled with Sonny. And Sonny's just a lover. And he just thrives on it. He just hugs and he gives you kisses and he tells you how much he loves you. And, you know, he comes in the morning on a weekend and climbs into bed with Pops. I give him the spoon. I get him to, lay down, and we cuddle and all that kind of stuff. So I said, no, I sleep in the nude. So I said, Natalia fucks with me, and she knows what she's doing now. She's getting a little rise out. You know, she's having fun. Like,
four.
She's almost four, and she does a lot of, like, you know what, Daddy? I don't love you as much as Olga and all that kind of stuff. And she's, like, fucking around. And by the way, I'm recording all this shit because at some point, she's going to be bitching to her friends or her therapist, and she's going to go, you know what? Sonny was always Daddy's favorite, and Daddy always paid more attention to Sonny. And Daddy, and chicks do this all the time, Daddy would always come in at night, he'd look at both of us, and then he'd climb into bed with Sonny. Bullshit! I'm recording this so
right.
she can
you
hear
tried
it.
To
I
snuggle
tried
her.
To fucking snuggle you, and you kicked my ass out of your mini bag.
She wanted none of you.
You wanted none of me. Told me to go fuck off and snuggle with Sonny. She did it to me a bunch of times. Oh. So now we're sitting around at the dinner table last night, and we're sitting around with Jody. And I said, kissing Sonny, you know, Natalia does, she pushes away. No, she thinks it's funny. And I said, Sonny cuddles with Daddy. He spoons with Daddy. And then Jody said to Natalia, do you cuddle with Daddy too? And she said, no. And then Jody said, why not? Why don't you cuddle with Daddy? And she said, because he farts. He makes farties all the time and loud. Lots of farties. And it is true. It's true. But, like, what are you supposed to say? You know, oh, she's such a liar. That bitch lies, man. Like, you know, kids don't really lie too much.
It's no.
Just, obviously, Daddy does make a lot of farties. And
every damn night.
No trouble outing.
She hasn't developed a super ego. She's all in.
She's all in.
So you know for sure she's telling the truth. And now she's announced that you're gaseous in front of your wife's hot friend.
Yeah, lots of farties. Daddy make big farties. Lots of farties.
It's not even enough that she doesn't want to snuggle you and she's announced that. That's kind of embarrassing.
That's a little embarrassing.
And she tops it off with the gas.
Yeah, well, she takes the snuggling, she pushes it back on me. She makes it my fault.
It's your fault. If you only you wouldn't do that, she would snuggle you.
Right, yeah.
But Sonny would still love you even no matter how much you smelled.
Yeah, so Sonny's he's a sweet, sweet boy. A puss, but a sweet, sweet boy.
Isn't that weird? I mean, they both, nature and nurture, the same. They came out the same time with the same DNA, and yet they're so different.
Well, she is... one of the traits that I think women learn fairly early on is you want something from me that has some currency, not so fast. It's in certain cultures, and it's in a lot of women, which is, you know, it can be argued it's good and it's bad. But the point is when he finds out I want to do something with him, he wants to please me, but not only that, if it's something that he enjoys, then he's down with it. So if I say to Sonny, hey, you know, I want to cuddle, and Sonny wants to cuddle, then that's win-win. If I say to Natalia, I want to cuddle, not so fast.
What's
now, I
me?
Want something from her, and she's aware of that, and that has its currency. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of human beings that are that way, too, just as adults, where you go, hey, I got an idea. You want to sit by the window? I want to sit by my wife. How about we swap seats? Wait a minute. You want something from me. And even though I want to sit by the window and I don't give a shit, I'm not going to let this opportunity go past because all of a sudden you want something from me.
Yeah, it's true. Like if there's, you know, a chair for sale at a store and nobody wants it, then all of a sudden somebody wants it. It has
a lot more value.
Yeah.
Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
Yeah. And when you have those sales at the department store and you see the women fighting over the last handbag, it's always women. It's never two dudes holding a crescent wrench and arguing over the last one of those. It's a feminine thing. She clearly, she's much more intelligent than my son.
Girls
is.
Mature faster and they hit all the milestones sooner.
She understands how to manipulate things and people, and she fucking works it. Like, she takes her Winnie the Pooh. She doesn't want to go to bed at night. So she takes her Winnie the Pooh teddy bear, and she stashes it downstairs somewhere. And then she gets into bed, and then at a certain point, she's like, I need my Winnie the Pooh. And we're like, where'd you put it? I don't know. And then me and my wife, like retards, have to go walk around the house looking for the fucking Winnie the Pooh. And she's not going to bed until she gets her Winnie the Pooh. She doesn't really need her Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
She needs to stay up.
She wants to stay up.
And once she established, I'm going to go nuts until I get my Winnie the Pooh, then we all just have to search the house until someone comes up with the Winnie. Now it's on us, by the way.
Yeah.
Once we start looking for the Winnie the Pooh, it's incumbent upon us to find Pooh before she goes
now
to bed.
Now, she's outsmarted you. My eight-month-old, he has a lovey, right, that he sleeps with. It's like just a little soft little thing. I got three backup loveys.
Right. Smart.
See, you need another Pooh.
Yeah.
You always know where it is.
Right. Yeah. I should make another Pooh.
But is there
and then present it to her for not
is there anything
me.
She could do to pull ahead of Sonny at some point?
She's, you know, she's very dynamic. She's, you know, she's a daredevil. She's a lot of fun. He's a puss. All that's good. And she has her moments. But in general, she's definitely a manipulator. And she definitely fucks with people. And he's just one big sack of sugar. That's all. And I really hope she comes around. And I seriously, every female, every Corolla female hates her dad. They all hate their dad. My grandmother hated her dad with a passion. My mother would have hated her dad, but he was an alcoholic, short order cook who like walked to San Francisco or something like that. So, issues. My sister hated my dad. Every female Corolla has hated her dad, and I don't want to continue that legacy. But fuck it, it's on. Bitch shouldn't have started trouble. No, I can already see her. Like, fuck me. I can already hear it. I can already hear the complaints. I can already hear
the
daddy didn't pay. You know what? He was always paying attention with Sonny. He would come in and laying down in Sonny's bed. He wanted to wrestle with Sonny, and he never. Well, you can only be, like, rejected or pushed away. Or when I pick up Natalia, she puts her knees in my chest and tries to push off. Sonny just hugs you like he's on the Demerol. Yeah. Aww. Yeah. Much better. Boys are so much better. Thank you. Speaking of boys.
Greg Fitzsimmons.
Greg Fitzsimmons here, everybody. Should we bring him in?
I think he's one of my favorites. One of my favorites ever.
I love Fitzsimmons, too. Yeah.
Is this the good luck?
That's it.
Yeah.
Like on Apollo, you rub the wood?
Hi. Yeah. So good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Great to see you, buddy.
Ace man.
Thanks for coming in.
Almost got an upskirt shot.
Brian?
Coming in. Oh, yep, I'm Brian.
Oh, geez.
By the way, Greg's going to be at the Punchline in San Francisco, 16th through the 19th of June. And Dr. Grins, holy shit.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Rapids. You know, you dream.
Sure, yep. One day you could be a doc. Not just Mr. Grins, he's a doctor.
Yes, Dr. Grins, everybody.
He put Mr. Grins out of business a long time ago.
As a PhD or an actual doctor of grinning?
I'd like to think that if you can put grins on people's faces, you're the doctor.
Yeah.
And that's what he does consistently. Yeah. It's Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Not since Patch Adams have we seen a doctor spread this kind of mirth. Right?
And that was during the Holocaust, so I got to think he was a better
doctor.
No,
that was a different...
Wait. That was a Jerry Lewis movie that never got released.
Wait, no, Patch Adams was just a kid's doctor.
Yeah, there was a Holocaust clown, which was like a Jerry Lewis movie.
Jacob the Liar.
Jacob the Liar.
Patton Oswalt does readings from it.
I've heard that there are underground readings of this film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the other Robin Williams film. But there is a Jerry Lewis film where he played like some sort of happy-go-lucky Nazi prison guard or something.
It got made?
Evidently got made and buried or something.
Yes,
yeah.
I've heard that this exists.
Yeah.
Is it true that the Jews run Hollywood?
I can't get a sidekick job for Craig fucking Kilborn. I'm not running anything.
I pushed you hard on that.
Can I say this?
Did you?
Yeah,
You did?
Oh, are you kidding me? I called up my friend's running it, Mike Dugan. I called him up and I said, you got two options on this gig. You... And I listed one other woman's name. I'm not going to say who it is because I don't want you to feel like I don't believe in you 100%. But this other woman had worked with him on the man show, on the Daily Show. So I had to mention her name as well.
Yeah.
Hey, can I say this? I think the Jews are running Hollywood.
You do?
It took you that long?
No, I think there's something. I've had some experiences over the last couple of pilot seasons. And my partner's a very fair-haired guy, Kevin Hench, red-haired guy from Massachusetts who's a state school guy. There is a little club. Part of it is Jewish. The other part of it is sort of Ivy League, sort of Harvard, Yale,
Harvard,
and all that
Lampoon
kind of stuff. And they sort of stick together. And there is an element, and I think we all suffer from it, which is if you're going to hire a writer... And the one guy is Jewish, and he's from Harvard, and the other guy went to a state school. He went to CSUN, and his last name is O'Malley. There's a part just sort of like choosing a doctor or choosing certain things where you sort of factor in the heritage. So to speak, it's like this. If someone said, hey, you need a bodyguard, I'd go, give me a black guy.
Yeah.
I just say it. And if somebody said... Hey, man, give me a therapist. I'd say, give me a Jew.
Yeah.
And if somebody said, Give me a mathematics professor. I'd say give me an Asian.
Give me a stand-up comedian. What are you asking for?
I'm asking for a woman who has a syndrome. Like in Facts of Life.
Oh, when, Jerry?
Yeah, when Jerry was disabled. There is a little bit of a, it's not an old boys club, but there's a little bit of a slightly Jewish, slightly Ivy League thing going on that I have noticed is a little bit tough to crack. And I'll give you an example. I've been trying to get Mike Lynch, our own Mike Lynch, kind of a gig for a little while. And I've sat around these tables while these so-called funniest guys in Hollywood punch up your script.
Yeah.
Lynch is funnier than they are.
I wrote on the Wanda Sykes show this past fall, and Lynch was the writer's assistant on the show. And that dude scored more jokes in the monologue than half the writing staff.
Do you think he should change his name, like if he had been Mike Lynchstein?
No, because I would say this to you, and I brought up, do Jews run the business? Because, look, the Jews run banks. They run the media, and I like that. That's the slander, you know. And like that's the worst thing that you can say. And I got to think that your race has really progressed nicely. If you know how many other races would trade out shiftless and lazy or drunken for runs a major industry where you need to be educated and intelligent.
We do win a lot of Nobel prizes.
Yeah, if that's the worst you can say is that you guys excel in banking.
The most lucrative industry you
could
be
in. In front of the camera, though, it's not good because I feel like I'm too Jewy.
Oh, no.
You don't look Jewy.
Yeah.
No. Don't blame it on the Jewish.
You look good. You look good. You look good. But in front of the camera, you're right.
Yeah, because Dharma and Greg, they hire Jenna Elfman to play a Jewish girl. They don't hire an actual
Jew. She was supposed to be Jewish?
Yeah.
Really?
Shocking.
What the fuck?
Wow.
It happens a lot.
They put Italians in those old Westerns to play the Indians.
Yeah, they did.
Now, Greg,
I didn't complain.
But I think what you're saying is you just kind of assume that somebody Jewish is going to be funny because of all of their pain and suffering, or is a quality we associate with that ethnicity.
I think there's certain jobs that have certain nationalities sort of attached to them. It'd be very easy if you got a chart and it said comedy writer, gardener, dentist, you know, psychiatrist,
fireman.
There'd be, well, affirmative action, fuck that up. But the point is you could get a list, and most Americans would draw a line from the nationality to the thing. And I'm not saying they would be right, but it would certainly be our perception. And if you're hiring a comedy writer, not a lot of lines going to the Mexican or the Asian and oftentimes the Irishman.
Now, see, there's where I'll disagree, because I think there's two schools of comedy writers in Hollywood. There's the Jewish neurotic school, the guys that created Seinfeld and, you know, the comedies where it really is about language and irony and all that. And then the Irish school, which I think is more of like the Archie Bunkers and Cheers, where you've really got sarcasm, ball busting, loyalty, all the things that you think with Irish.
Right.
But there's been a fairly disproportionate number of Irish.
No one draw a line to Vietnamese for showrunner.
No, that's massage.
Right, that's the point.
You're right. When you think Irish, you also think pain and suffering. Thus, you think poetry, music, and comedy.
Yes.
Yeah, but I still would argue, and again, I've sort of experienced this, there is a little bit of a, I'm not going to call it racism, but there is a little bit of a club. And part of the club, by the way, is an Ivy League sort of thing. And again, you're probably right to assume that the Jew who went to the Ivy League schools got a little more on the ball than the Irishman who went to CSUN. But there is a little bit of that, you know what? Let's play it safe. Let's go with this guy.
But what about Greg trying to get me a gig? That was so nice.
Thanks, I try to get you a gig all the time. Because,
I know. Marriage Ref, he tried?
Marriage Ref, I tried. I tried to get you. Well,
Did they go with the Marriage Ref?
They went with, what's her name?
They changed the whole concept because they wanted somebody doing man on the street, funny bits to bump in and out. And then they went with just a straight news.
Yeah, and they got Warner Wolf, I guess, or Marv Albert doing the announcements, which works, I think.
And they just have the attractive chick.
She's just a straight newscaster, so they changed that job.
Yeah.
I think there's too much going on that set. To me, what's funny is the stuff that each marriage We all have that one fight that is safe enough that we go to it. We know that we can push that button, and she's going to get pissed off, and I'm going to make her mad, but it's not going to throw the marriage off the rails. It's become the safe fight.
Yeah.
That, to me, is much more compelling than all these, like, let's go to the statistic girl, and I feel like that just thins it out.
Also, I mean, I did the show, so I can tell you firsthand. They do a lot of, you know, she's a coupon clipper, and it bugs me, instead of her pussy smells, or something a little more realistic. Listen, if my wife...
Well, if she's cutting coupons, she's probably not douching, Adam.
Yeah, unless she cut one for Massengale.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just saying... First off, if I saw my wife clipping coupons, I'd fucking fall to my knees and just look up at the heavens and start crying.
Yeah.
Because normally she's giving away money. But the point, she don't. My wife doesn't understand, like, that concept. Like, she does that thing where it's like, we have our nanny, Olga, and we pay her full time. I pay her full time. And then, like, a Saturday will roll around. But I pay her full time, but she shows up, you know, she's there 4 days a week, but she's kind of on call. And then a Saturday I'll roll around and I'll go, hey, let's go to a movie and go to the dinner. And I'll go, well, we don't have a sitter. And I'll go, well, get Olga. We'll get Olga. Oh, I don't want to bother her on a Saturday. I know you don't want to bother her. I pay her.
Yeah.
I know to you it feels like we're hassling on her, like we just banged on the door of some random Guatemalan woman and said, hey, could you look after our kids for about 5 hours while we go eat? That's not how she gets paid by me. My wife is so fucking nice. She just has that feeling of like, don't hassle the nice
lady.
So
if you were the couple,
the kids.
If you were the subject on Marriage Ref, it would be about exploiting illegal immigration.
Yes, and clipping coupons for
and the pussy smelling thing.
Yes.
I think would be compelling.
It would be. No, well, I'm just saying they start off with fake arguments. You know what I mean? Like the one I did, like the one chick clipped coupons. Like the guy really gave a shit about that. The other one was. The chick was into roller derby, and she was staying in shape, and it was awesome. And he's like, "Woman, I want you to stay home and cook for me and stuff." And it was cooked up. And the problem is, they do too many laps with the same thing.
Yeah.
But really, something like, you know, you fucked my best friend, and I can't get over it. And now you claim to be friends with him, and you invite him over to the house for parties, and then I see you guys getting drunk and smoking a cigarette out on the patio together, and that's bullshit. Like. That would be a much better real problem.
Well, I saw your episode on the show, and I liked that you just summarily dismissed one of the marriages. You didn't offer to solve it.
I did.
You said they should end it, which I thought was a
wow.
I like that take.
Yeah, well, I think it's Sometimes you got to play the.
Well, Jerry Seinfeld hired Greg Fitzsimmons, Irishman, to write on the marriage.
Well, not to write. I flew out. And I sat with the two of them, Tom and Jerry,
wow.
in Jerry's office, which has a 360-degree view of Manhattan.
Nice.
And wrote for a day on before it was a show, just kind of trying to figure out what it was. And boy, like that guy.
Nice.
Like him a lot.
Good.
Yeah, very nice.
I would also say I would say it's a show where the title. And the premise is a little bit better than the show.
Yes.
People don't seem to be wild about the show. Now, maybe it's also the kind of show that if it hit its stride and they got the right guests, which they have been getting and all that kind of stuff, it could find its way. But The Marriage Ref is a great name for a show.
Yeah. Yep.
And it also, the concept is
Tom
a strong
Papa's good.
Concept. And he's good. And everything's good. It's like, you know what it's really like? It's like a stew that has a bunch of your favorite ingredients in it, and you take a sip and you go, yeah, not as good as I thought it
now,
would be.
Now, do you think it would have been better if they had gone with their original idea and had their female doing man-on-the-street stuff where they ask, you know...
Does
they
your pussy stink?
Right, or do you flip coupons
yeah.
or whatever, and then you get them to say something stupid, and then you...
I think that's good stuff going in and out of commercial, and then I think you have more of it on the website. A lot of these shows don't take advantage of the website as much as they could because, to me, that's a free channel. You know, mm-hmm. you shoot the show and you take the outtakes because you know they're shooting it fat. Like, they probably
right.
went over when you did the show, right? And you lose 5-6 minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Throw that on the site.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I think that...
I should find out how the ratings were because Donald Trump promised me it was going to be their highest rated show.
Who's there? What do you mean there?
It was me, Donald Trump and Gloria Estevan.
Oh, oh.
And Donald pulled me aside and gave me, you know, those guys are just wildly confident, super cocky, and they just do that stuff, even when you don't give a shit. And they go, Adam, this is going to be the highest rated marriage record. You'll see. You'll see. And you just wonder, like, do you just keep talking until you believe it? Or, like, how does it work?
He's unbelievable. I mean, people like that. Donald Trump makes my stomach turn. He is so gross. I mean, as a New Yorker, I know what that guy is about. He's just a pushy, nudge, self-promoting, and behind it all, he doesn't do anything very creative that hasn't been done before. He lost all his money. He got it back again. He marries women that clearly, I mean, it's not like even he's kidding himself about what their agenda is.
Well, I had to reevaluate him briefly, and I'll tell you why, and
you're
maybe you guys can
job.
Disagree. No, that you recommended before that I didn't get. Story of my life. His kids, Ivanka and the other one that are on the Celebrity Apprentice,
yeah,
they come across so well that it makes me think he can't be that bad because he turned out these kids that seem really intelligent and kind of warm.
Well, that's a good topic for your next podcast that you do with Adam's wife.
The parent experiment?
Does it matter? Does it matter how you parent and who the parent is? Or is it in our DNA? Because I'm shocked by the kids I meet who I know whose parents are fucked up.
Yeah,
and,
then yeah.
I know good parents.
My dad.
And I know good parents who turn out shitty kids. I don't know if there's as much of a connection as we'd like to think.
Oh, great.
I think it's one more category where we, as human beings, we're searching for control. So all we want is some control, whether it's a universal remote or Jesus Christ or fate or crystals or psychics. It's like we want control. And this idea of you got to get your kid to listen to Mozart in the womb and drink filtered water, not tap water. And everything is sort of or eat organic Cheetos
don't
and shit like that.
Compete.
Don't let them do this.
Right.
It's all about that.
No
it's guns. All about this control. The reality is every fucking person I know is exactly the same as they were in junior high. And I'm sure they're going to the grave that way. And everyone's just sort of on their own trajectory. And they do their own thing. And they're sort of meant to do this or not meant to do that. We're not all special. Not everyone's going to achieve their dreams and goals. But really, like I'll give you just a very simple sort of microcosm of what we're talking about that I think is going to illustrate Greg's point very nicely without him talking at all. Which is this.
As he puts his arm around
As me. I put my arm around him.
I was sweet.
No. In that next room is the ass of one Donald Mizrahi, a.k.a. the Wheeze. And also sitting next to him is the professor, Sandy Gans, his cousin. And then there's me. We're all car nuts. And I've told the story before, but we go to Pebble Beach every year, and we sit around and we bask in the glory of all these cars. And a few years back, we're out to dinner, and we're having a conversation about tire size, like you know, 225, 15, 60 series versus a 235, 55 series, 15, or whatever.
A conversation Greg and I have
had a retarded tire conversation. And I said, it's interesting that we're all nuts about cars here. And Donnie said, well, of course, I'm nuts about cars. My dad's a transmission mechanic. I grew up around cars. I grew up around his shop. That's all we did. He brought home a new car every week. And I said, all right. And I said, but Sandy, why are you nuts about cars? Because Sandy's dad was like a butcher. And he said, well, you know, my dad was a butcher, but he, you know, he liked cars a little bit. And I was like, well, my dad's a full-blown puss who never even – my dad would rather ride a horse if he had a choice. He doesn't like cars. He never liked cars, never owned a tool. So I said, so here are the three of us all sitting here. One guy comes from the parent of is a mechanic. The other one's a butcher. The other one's a substitute school teacher. You have a range here of loves cars as a parent – sort of mid-range to I don't give a flying fuck about cars. Like if my dad comes over to my house and says, what's new? And I said, I bought a new Ferrari and it's sitting in the garage. He'll say, that's nice, and turn the corner and head down the hall into the den. And by the way, before he leaves, he doesn't go, let's get a peek at that Ferrari. He just walks out the front door, gets in a shitty lease car, and goes back home to Pasadena. So you have the three different levels of enthusiasm, you know, hot, medium, and ice cold, yet we're all equally into cars. How would you explain that? There's
because
no nature or nurture.
You have become the father figure in this trifecta. They look
just
to
because
you,
I'm paying for the motel.
They want your
and
approval. They want to bond with you, and so they've come to love cars the way they love
no,
you.
No, because they all loved cars separately before we got together.
That's what they told you.
I have pictures of Sandy
in
high
Greg's
school.
Dad was a pretty well-known broadcaster.
Right.
He went into the family. You did what your dad did.
But I did not – I never wanted to go into radio until many years after my dad died. I actually was – I got into radio because I was doing stand-up, and you do so many morning radio interviews where, you know, you did a show the night before. You hang out. You go to bed at 3 a.m.
Right.
You wake up at 6 to do 7 interviews.
Sure.
With all the –
You're trying to get seats at Dr. Grin's.
You're trying to push seats at Dr. Grin's. And then all of a sudden, Howard brings me on, and by his good graces, I end up with the show. I never went after it. Every time I try to get out, they keep dragging me back in.
But it is interesting that, even more interesting, that you, even without pursuing it, it still found its way to you.
Yeah.
T-Bone, do you got some second part of the news, by the way,
I
cooking?
I do. And by the way, my dad was a mechanic for 35 years, and I have no interest in cars, and I'm happy to drive my Honda for the rest of my life. Like, if I had $10 million, I'd be happy to drive my Honda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm in the line for a new car. Nothing too fancy, but something a little sport. I got a Volkswagen Passat right now, V6, Tektronic.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to step it up to something a little bit cooler. What do you think about that the little minis, the Coupe?
Oh, he loves
those.
S version, love it. Love
Get
that
it?
Car.
Go
yep.
for it.
They went from a supercharger to a turbo last year. And it's, I don't know, it's 178 horsepower or something. It's a hot little car.
It's
love
a six-cylinder?
Not four, inline four.
So they get all that power with an inline four.
Yeah, it's not a ton of power, but it works.
Well, by the way, my dad has one. The tires are a little expensive, but that should be fine for you.
Well, hold on
when you're my dad.
Well, 255 60s.
Why is it dad? Before. Hold on. The tires of that car are cheap.
He said they're more expensive than other tires. Maybe he can't get...
Well, your dad is buying the tires that came with the car instead of just buying any 195 60 Series 15 that you can find at Tire Rack or whatever.
Oh, so the ones that come with it are a softer, more performance tire.
Well, oh, nice. The compound.
Yeah, nice.
No, what happens is...
in 30 days.
People make this mistake. It's like Dr. Drew, when he took his BMW to the dealership to get car tires.
Oh,
I love white guy problems.
Yeah.
And they fucking gouge the shit out of you. You don't bring your car to the dealership.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. You do
if
not...
If you go to a strip club, you don't go to the VIP room for a hand job. You
right.
go to the Thai massage place around the corner for $35.
Just as good.
Instead of $120 a song.
No, this is the type of thing you want to teach your son.
Yes.
No, I think it went better. I just go into the bathroom, find the guy selling the Lavors and the mints, and give him an extra $10 for a hand.
Is that what he's there for?
A hand
always
is a hand.
Wondered why he was in the bathroom.
Well, what's he doing in the bathroom when you got a boner?
Ugh. You know what I hate about that guy? It's that I don't want any of his products.
But
more importantly, I feel sorry for him the whole time I'm in there.
Staring at boners and sniffing ass for a 9-hour shift, you feel sorry for the guy?
Because he's acting cheery about it.
Well, the part I don't like is when you wash your hands at the sink because it's filled with pussy drippings and stripper glitter, and you raise your hands up and he hands you the towel.
Yeah.
And when he hands you the towel, when you accept the towel, it's a tacit agreement now. Like, you must.
Absolutely.
You must return. So now you sit there like you don't know what to do, and I have this weird, everyone has it. I'm cheap, but I spend a lot of money. It's a weird Corolla gene. And I will go in there, back in that club, and make it rain with balled up 20s. But as soon as I get into that bathroom and the guy wants $2 because he gave me a Tic Tac and a towel, I'm like, fuck that.
Yeah.
What do I look like? Fucking Daddy Warbucks?
And he's not enjoying a shift like that girl who gets to dance to a Van Halen song.
Right. Imagine standing in
it's
a bathroom
a
for a living.
Song, to be fair. On
yeah.
show.
Imagine standing in a bathroom for a living, and they shouldn't employ those guys.
No.
I don't know what that is. No. Like, is that classy? It's uncomfortable.
It's their way of saying, hey, we're a class. It's an Italian guy's
right.
version.
We're classy.
Italian guys like that guy. They like mouthwash. They like cologne. And they like another guy near them when they're urinating.
And handing them a towel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was
I don't
like
it.
Jesus, who was a Roman. He wanted the 12 guys at the dinner. He wanted the washing of the feet, all that
stuff. He's like the bathroom apostle. But let me say this. Worst, I like it. If there's a large group of guys and I can get lost, that's fine. But what I hate it when it's just me and that guy solo. And he's just staring at your back while you're taking a piss. And it's all riding on you. You're going to turn around. He's going to look at you. There's going to be a little eye contact. Do you go to the sink?
Yeah.
Do you just walk right out? Yeah. Are you going to see the guy again? What if he hands you something?
Yeah.
And there's nothing in there, by the way. Like, that guy should be selling, pheromones or something to get you laid. There's nothing in there. The shot of Axe is not going to get you laid.
I usually stand outside the bathroom door, and I wait until I see him go to take a piss. Then I go in.
Oh, that's what you make.
And I take a piss, and I get out of it.
Shoulder roll, cartwheel.
Just pick and roll it.
Down on your belly, like you're crawling under barbed wire.
Well, I figure it's clean in there. No one's dripping on the floor with the guy watching.
Yeah.
Now, Greg, you have a boy and a girl, right?
Yes.
Do you find that they're different? I mean, obviously, they're different. But do you find that, did you find that from the minute, like, you know, Adam's got almost four-year-olds. But instantaneously, the girl, he was more manipulative.
No, my boy's a girl, my girl's a boy.
Really?
My girl's a mess. She's total alpha. She's aggressive. She's in trouble.
Yeah.
My boy is neat.
Yes.
And he's very ordered. He doesn't like chaos. He likes to know the schedule.
Yeah. Likes to lay out his cars and his little trains.
Yeah.
Boys like to put stuff in the line, and then she just comes in and knocks it all done.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
over. And then he yells, Tatalia! I don't know why everything, they have to mispronounce everything is. Everything is cute and mispronounced. My assistant Jay is J-Jo. The nanny Olga is Old Guy.
What's the name of the guy who stands in your bathroom?
That's Lucius.
Yes. Yeah. Lucius. I love he has an evil name. Just so that it excuses whatever you might do in there with him.
All right, T-Bone, how about some news, baby girl?
You know how your parents got divorced, but then they didn't really?
My parents are so fucking apathetic and so fucking lazy that they couldn't even get divorced. Mm. Like, that would have... Divorce is actually effort put toward a relationship. If you think about it, it's an effort to separate and to finalize it, but they're so fucking cheap and so lazy and so apathetic, just like not giving me a middle name, they realize getting divorced would be something and we're about nothing. So let's just leave each other.
It's funny you say that. They didn't give me a middle name either, and I resented the shit out of it
whole life. Rightfully so.
Why not? Did they give you a reason?
I think all three kids were surprises, and I think that there was just not a lot of prep. There was not a lot of proactive parenting.
I had 9 months to pull something together.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point. You're still at the hospital, and the bloom is off the rose.
Yeah.
I haven't even taken you home yet.
And it's not like the Irish go for a stretch with the name. It's always Kevin or Michael.
Right.
No, it could be Sean.
Kevin or Sean.
Sean in the middle there.
Right. It's like, you're not going to kill you. You could be Liam now.
I told the story before, but I talked to my dad and my mom, and they gave the worst possible answer you could give.
Like, what's that?
You be me.
Okay.
Ask why I don't
Mom,
have a middle
dad,
name.
Dad, what the fuck? All my friends have middle names.
They would never be in the same room together, but we'll start with Dad.
Dad, what is it about you and Mom?
Don't be aggressive. Just ask about why no middle name.
Mom, Dad, how come
just Dad.
Hello?
They're not in the same room.
Yeah, just Dad.
Dad, how come I don't have a middle name?
That was pop water.
I don't know.
I'm going to go ask Mom.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mom, how come I don't have a middle name?
Did you ask your dad?
Yeah.
Thanks. That's it.
You're
just announcing the world, I'm bored with my kids. Like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Now everyone's like, this is little Dylan, Bobby,
Michael,
Jacob, Michael,
Count.
Thurston, Count, Fosuede the third. Yeah. Oh, shut the fuck up.
There's no there's no baby booties bronze for me. There's very few children's pictures. It was just really like, but you know what? They were right because it didn't make a difference. They were right. I'm fucking up my life by spending way too much time trying to be the parent of all time.
Right.
This is what I'm gleaning today. That doesn't really matter what I
do. Doesn't matter.
I think the best thing you can do
cast.
Is, you know what you're doing that's amazing? And this is what in Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell says, the mother determines most of the character strengths for the child. Number one, you have a college education, which is the best thing you could have done for your kid.
Dear
number two, you work. And number three, did you breastfeed?
I did.
Okay.
Find my mom answering her trivia questions, Paul Bryan. This is my mom. She's a wicked sense of humor.
How should I know?
This is my mom. We did a thing when we did the radio show. We said, hey, Mom, you live in North Hollywood, and Dave Damashek, the old sports guy, his mom lives in Beaver Falls, Pittsburgh, or maybe she was in Arizona at the time. But either way, Phoenix, either Beaver Falls, Phoenix. Either way, you live in a place where you get the radio show, and she lives in a place where they don't have the radio show. Let's figure out who the bigger fan is. So we're going to ask you some trivia questions about the radio show. And we're like, all right, give the name of our black intern.
How should I know?
And that was her on the phone, like, how should I? Well, first off, obviously we're asking questions that are sort of relevant and pertinent to people who might listen to the radio
show.
Any
listener would have known Geron's name.
Right. Her thing was, how would I know your intern's name? And my thing was, she wasn't smart enough to figure out the fact that we wouldn't ask questions that people who didn't listen wouldn't know the answer of. Like, yeah. I wouldn't go, what color are my socks this morning, had I not talked about
them? There was a pool of information. She should have been.
Yeah.
Well, the great thing is, after, let's hear Mom's few more reactions.
How would I know that?
After about 25 of those, Mo Damashek got on the blower and promptly answered every single question.
And she,
how can you possibly expect me to answer that?
Dave's mom answered pretty obscure questions that even I didn't know.
Every single one of them. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's my mom and her wild sense of humor.
But if
what
you
a
had
jovial fun. What
if,
a party. Oh,
had,
what
if
a party.
You had a choice between a mother that knew nothing or knew every answer correctly. I'm going with mom who
knows
nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. No, but this is know nothing that's sort of angry about it. Angry that you asked her a question.
How should I know?
I got a great conversation with my mom once where it's like, and by the way, the people you don't talk to, they bring it on themselves. I said to her, I said, what's my stepdad, John? I said, what's he make ballpark a year? She said, Brian will tell you.
How should I know?
I said, but mom, seriously, just, you know, 50 grand, 80 grand, what?
How would I know that?
I said, well, you've been married to him for, you know, 21 years. So just, and he's the only source of income. So, you know, so I don't need any money. I'm not borrowing any money. I'm okay. I make my own money. I'm doing fine. I'm just curious how John's doing over there at Lockheed. No.
How can you possibly expect me to answer that?
No, nothing. No answer.
And it's not like when you're married that long that there's a wealth of topics you can discuss together. That, for me, in my marriage, that's probably one of the biggest ones is how much did you make at the Dr. Grinch?
Right.
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 Yeah.
You'd have something to say.
What's your bonus structure?
Yeah.
And you sell any CDs? How's the merch?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we get into all that stuff. How do you not know?
Oh, really?
It's not like, oh, yeah. No, we get into.
Married to a Jew, I believe.
Oh. Yes. Yeah, I got a Jew on board.
Let me a little contrast with my wife. I told her about 300 times, hey, baby, I'm out of a job. I don't know if you've heard about that. I've been telling her for about 2 years. I'm out of a job. We got to tighten our belts and get our shit together here. And there was this, we'd get in this argument where we had some security at a gig I was playing, you know, and we had to pay the security. And I said, and Donnie said, well, we'll pay the guy, Phil, he's Jimmy's security guy. I said, we'll pay him out of the money from the gig. You know, I went to go to do Irvine for 5 nights, and Phil came out there. It was a couple $100 a night, and we'll pay him out of the kitty that we get for doing the gig. And Lynette said,
oh, my God, it's exciting.
She said, no, we'll pay for that. We'll pay for that. And so then I talked to, I didn't know about it, and then I talked to Donnie, and I was like, yeah, Donnie, Lynette's insisting on paying for the security out of you guys instead of out of the, you know, the gig. And I said, why? She said, I don't know. She insisted on it. And I went home and I said, hey, sweetie, why don't we pay Phil from the money I made from the gig versus just out of our own pockets, you know?
It's gross.
I think you could call it an expense.
That
you know?
Is definitely a corporate expense.
And she's like, yeah, I don't know. And I'm like, well, but Donnie said, why not? And you kind of waved him off. Yeah, so I just figured it was your security.
I don't know who's dumber here, Donnie or you. Your wife is clearly making alliances that will serve her later on.
Yeah.
She's going to want some information.
Right.
She's going to want, you know, if things go rocky in the marriage, she's
evidently.
Need, yeah.
It's very nice of you, but let's pay from that. And then I said, listen, I got to get you a little more focused on the money over here because we don't have any money. And she said, I'm very focused on it. And I said, how much is the mortgage on this house?
No.
Wow. Yes.
I mean, ballpark? Did she have ballpark?
No ballpark.
Jeez.
No ballpark.
Oh.
But very focused. Laser.
Nope.
Laser.
Here's my biggest beef.
Here's my point. Nicest person on the planet, not interested. If you're not interested, it is fucking hard to get people interested in shit they're not interested in. And it's like...
Not interested.
If your kid, like, we're bringing it full circle. If your kid ain't into math, fuck it. Move on.
Yes.
I don't know. No Sylvan Learning Center is ever going to get your kid into math. Right.
And everybody who talks about the second stage of learning in life, post-school, real life, what the fuck do I do now, is about what do you do well, do that a lot.
Yes.
Don't mow your own lawn, do your own taxes. Pay people that do that well and take all the energy that you have and do that one thing. And you know you've only got one.
Yes.
And do it a lot and do it well.
And if you're bad at math, you're going to be bad at math at 13 and 113. So fuck it.
Yeah.
Get an accountant and then do something where you excel and get someone else to do your math.
I think that a great how-to book, fuck it.
Right.
People need to say fuck it more.
Right.
You know, whether it's going after a lawsuit against a neighbor over something small or, you know, your child didn't get the PSAT score that they wanted, fuck it. We don't have college money, fuck it. If my kid's smart, someone will give him a scholarship. Otherwise, what's a college fund?
It.
It's a giant bribe to a school to take your mediocre kid because he doesn't belong there.
Right. It has no meaning.
It is. Look, I've said it many times. Like Jimmy Kimmel said to me in like 1994, listen, if you could learn to cut, literally cut with a razor blade and tape and edit this audio tape for the radio station, you would be a much bigger asset around here. And I went, fuck it. I'm not going to do that. And I was right. It was the greatest decision I ever made.
Absolutely.
Well, I had a news story about bigamy.
Yeah, give me that.
Should I bother with it?
Yeah, give me a bigamy one.
A man in Wisconsin charged with bigamy told police he planned on divorcing his first wife, but he simply lost track of time.
Oh, this is what my dad could have done.
Much like the Corollas.
Yeah, that's eventually they remarried, and that's why they had to get divorced.
This guy
did not bother. It's just ironic that you talk about a bigamy case in Wisconsin, because have you seen the size of those people?
Yeah.
Each one is two.
It should be a big of them claim.
I think that once you get over, 300 pounds, it is bigamy. And then eventually polygamy when you hit 900 pounds.
Holy-gamy.
Yes. Yeah.
This guy, 37 years old, had lost track of time.
Uh-huh.
Never got around to his official divorce.
Uh-huh.
3 years later, he was still legally married to one woman when he went to Vegas and married another. He admitted he knew he was still married, but said he had meant to obtain a divorce upon his return from Vegas.
I don't think he said the word obtain or upon.
His second wife
You're
called...
You're tearing this one apart.
He said, I was fixing to get one of them divorcers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never got around to it.
Right.
His second wife called the police when she found out.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, his second wife... The one he just married in Vegas?
The second wife called police when she found out that he never followed through with the divorce.
Uh-huh, the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds like your parents. This could be laziness. You blamed your parents not divorcing on laziness. What about this guy?
It was probably $65 for the paperwork, which was a king's ransom to the Corollas in the mid-late 70s. It involved burning calories. And it was something. They always take the side of nothing versus something, the way my Corollas went. And why get divorced when you have no assets to divide and you're both just going to go slink off in your own parts of North Hollywood and wait to die? Like, why?
Yeah, they've got the $65. Why? If they pay the fee, there's nothing to fight over.
I don't know that my dad had the $65 because he went and lived with my grandparents, which were his in-laws at the time.
Oh.
Yeah,
and
hello?
A one bedroom with one bathroom in North Hollywood. You had to walk through their bedroom to get to the bathroom.
Mm.
But they did proceed to loathe each other for many years after
many
their non-divorce.
Many years of uncomfortable loathing.
How did they keep the flames alive and the hatred?
It's
funny that the love can fade, but the hatred
isn't
doesn't.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I've said many times, I don't think they hated each other. I think they were humiliated by being with each other. Like, Teresa, you've been with plenty of schlubs in your life, right?
A lot.
Sexual schlubs. And women do that all the time because I've had it done to me personally where it's like I run into some old girlfriend and I can see her go, I can't believe I let that pig fuck me.
Yeah.
Like, I sucked his dick. Oh, God. Like, women have that sense of shame. Like that. What? Now, imagine two people. Like, when you're at a party, that sense of shame is more powerful than even hatred. Like, when you're at a party and there's someone across the party, you go, oh, fucking Kurt's here. Fucking hate that guy. Fucking took my starting position on the football team in high school. You know, I'm going to fucking go over there just to fuck with him. You know what I mean? They're, actually, hatred can kind of bring you together, like Palestinians and Jews. Like, you know what? We're not going to leave you alone. We're going to blow up your fucking pizza parlor. Or we're going to get right in on you.
It's highly charged.
But if you're at a party and you look across the way and you're like, oh, fuck, I got really fucking drunk and I fucked that chick. And I think I threw up when I was eating her pussy. And, oh,
and
fuck that. And then she sees you and goes, oh, that's a guy who barfed in my pussy. Yeah. Oh, fuck that. And next thing you know, you're at that party. Believe me, you two aren't getting near. I mean, you're talking to your friend, like, where is she? She left. She go to the bathroom. We're not going over by the punch bowl until she clears up. That sense of shame keeps you apart.
Yeah.
And my parents looked at each other and went, God damn, you're so fucking pathetic. I can't believe I ever fucked you. Like, ugh, yuck. You remind me of everything that's wrong with me and how I was and how pathetic
I
was when I met you.
Well, and the turbo boost to that whole scenario is that everybody knows you were with this person, so you can't, like, your status is diminished by their very presence.
And normally, there's an alpha in that group, where there's the pathetic fat guy that got to bang Teresa Strasser when she was working at Islands, who doesn't mind standing next to her at a party going, hey, look at this, buddy. Not so bad. I didn't do too bad for myself.
Yeah.
But imagine if you both felt that way.
Yeah.
That's how my parents felt. So I think they're both wildly humiliated that they're ever with each other, and thus that's what kept one in the car while the other one, you know, waited for me to come down the porch.
So in this schematic of marriage that you've laid out for us so eloquently today, if you're listening at home, look at your spouse and think, am I repulsed by that person? And if you're not, they are by you.
Well,
it has to be one.
It's got to be one. You can't both think you got the better end of the deal.
No.
That would be too perfect
of a
love.
They both thought they got the business end of the stink stick.
Well, that's a really bad setup. But I think in most marriages, one person, and I have to think it's my wife in this case, thinks they did better.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
My wife did better, right?
Yeah, but that's a compliment to you.
Yes.
Yeah, because you don't want... It's like, here's what you want. Here's what you want in a wife. You want the same thing you want in a hotel room. You don't want any of your buddies walking in your hotel room and going, what the fuck? What are you staying here for? Jesus, I thought you were doing pretty good.
Yeah.
What you want is them to walk in your hotel room and go, whoa, somebody's doing pretty good for themselves. Now, there's a sort of backhanded compliment is, how did your smelly ass get in this beautiful suite with all the Carrara marble?
Yeah.
But it's still a compliment. That's when you're with a hot chick or with a chick that's better than you, that's a suite.
Yeah.
You want your buddies to come over and go, how did you land that?
But what if you come into your hotel room and your buddy's in the hotel room?
Fucking it.
That's a thing.
Fucking every piece of furniture.
I didn't work out that scenario. All I'm saying is you know.
No, you've done a good sale because guys, I think, are more proud. There's nothing we
I saw Greg's wife and I was like, wow.
Were you?
Yeah.
And for a second you thought, huh.
Yeah, what the?
You met my wife.
I guess he had his hair.
She's lovely.
It was like one of those. I had to do.
He must have his hair then.
He's funny.
He entertains
her.
Yeah.
Some people think he's funny. Yeah, that's. I was. Yeah. He must have his hair.
Well,
must have someone else's hair.
I had hair.
No, as a woman, I understand Greg's appeal.
You do.
You're losing your hair.
Yeah, Greg's pretty hot.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Really?
Because he's funny and he has kind of like a protective Irish temper thing, and he'll get into a fight over you.
Yeah.
Some women would be afraid of that and think he's going to punch me in the face, but you understand? No,
that's
I'll
very
punch
clear.
Somebody else in the face.
You would never.
Right.
You.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see the attraction.
But I think for men, it's more to have sold a piece of shit to somebody than to own a really good car.
Uh-huh.
So a marriage to somebody who's better than you for us is proof that you're a good fucking salesman.
Yeah.
Because your friends know you're a piece of shit.
Right.
And you got to marry this woman.
Yeah.
Oh, Fitzy's a good salesman.
Yeah. Well, I bought into it when I saw you over at Kimmel's and your lovely wife. By the way, this is it's a good note to go out on, by the way, since we're running late.
And that was Grapefruit Simmons sitting in with the guys. Some news. And talking about Birdemic. We've played the Birdemic interview before, right?
I think we played a portion of it, but not all of it. Yeah. There's plenty more from that.
We got to play more.
Hour of gold.
That was one of the first interviews where I I thought, what is this the entire time? And it really surpassed the movie of Birdemic, but now he's just known as the Birdemic guy who was on the Corolla show because of that.
They really should have included like video of him on the Corolla show on like the Blu-ray release.
Yeah, it was so fun though, and what a fun interview. And you
in
got
lieu of a director's commentary. Watch this; it explains everything.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get going with another clip. Yesterday we played a Wheeler Walker Jr. song. Today we're gonna play a Wheeler Walker Jr. song. Fuck you with the lights on.
Adam Carolla Show 2443. Wheeler Walker Jr., Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop in this portion. Joe Coy was also on this episode if you're trying to find it. It's from October of 2018, and it's another hilarious in-studio performance. Check it out.
So the song I'm going to play is called Fuck You With The Lights On, which is, you know, again, my version of a love song. Because, you know, when you love someone, you want to see it going in.
Yeah.
We good?
Take it away.
Girl, there's something different about you. Makes me want to try something brand new. So let's get you back to my place. We ain't got no time to waste. I want to put a big smile on your face. Want to fuck you with the lights on. Want to do it all night long. Want to see them old titties flapping. Flip that switch, baby, make it happen. Come on, honey, do we have a deal? I'll split your legs in the electric bill. Girl, I'll write you a love, 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 love song. If I can fuck you with the lights on. Well, fuck going green, cause your tight pussy needs to be seen. So let me fuck you with the lights on. I wanna do it all night long. Wanna see that ass clapping. Flip that switch, baby, make it happen. Come on, honey, do we have a deal? I'll split your legs in the electric bill. Girl, I'll write you a love, 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 love song. If I can fuck you with the lights on.
You got to be asked to do a lot of weddings and quinceañeras.
Oh, yeah.
Anniversaries.
Yeah, I do. I turned down, you know, now that I just got off tour with Kid Rock, so once you do that, it's kind of no going back to the weddings and shit.
Really?
And that was Wheeler Walker Jr. once again bringing it with a live rendition.
I'm going to go to HR for what you said to me before the clip started.
Oh, yeah. I should have said the song name, too, but I forgot.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Wheeler Walker Jr. playing Fuck You With The Lights On live in studio. Now, before we get going with our next clip, got to remind everybody about Tommy John because it's 2021. It's time to trade out whatever cheap underwear was sliding down or riding up last year and switch it out to that wonderful Tommy John. Don't stop there. Get the loungewear. All right.
You have to get the loungewear. Get 5 pair of the lounge pants. You'll probably only wear one of them, but if anything ever happens to them, you got some backups.
Yeah, it's breathable. It's lightweight. It's moisture wicking.
Makes you feel like a genie.
Yeah, it has 4 times the stretch of competing brands, and it moves with you.
I believe that.
Yeah, I feel more flexible when I wear Tommy John.
It's like I can suddenly do the splits, but I'm not going to try.
Nothing can stop me. And it has the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guaranteed, and we got a deal for you. Tell them about it, Gio.
Go to TommyJohn.com/classics and save 15% on your first order. Go right now. Save 15% right now at TommyJohn.com/classics. That's TommyJohn.com/classics to save 15% on your first order. See site for details.
All right. Now, Gio, do you remember when last year we played a version of Blah Blah Blah, but it was based off of their Twitter bios? We would read the Twitter bio and everyone would have to guess which celebrity had that douchey Twitter bio.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I love that too. And we'll do it again this year. But that was inspired by Jocko Willink's Twitter bio, which Adam actually loved. And he thought, that is a good Twitter bio. And I hate all these other douchey ones. So let's play a game based off of that. And because he really respects Jocko's work ethic. And obviously he has that just that background of getting up early and just working hard. And Adam always loves that. So here's Jocko getting interviewed by Adam.
One of the greatest interviews of the year, Jocko Willink on Adam Carolla Show 2085. Dave Damaschek was also in this, but not in this portion. Gina Grad and Brian Bishop. It's from May of 2017. It's a lot of fun. We get a little bit of the news tacked down there, too. And Jocko proves to be a good sport, as in addition to being like a serious guest. He's quite fun. Check it out.
Jocko Willink here. Way of the Warrior Kid. From Wimpy to Warrior. The Navy SEAL way. And who would know better than Jocko? Black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Commander of SEAL Team 3. U.S. Navy SEAL, first deployed in Baghdad in 2003 and retired in 2010. Good to see you again, Jocko.
What's happening?
You know, I thought of you this morning. I took my freezing cold shower, as I always do, first thing in the morning, just to punish myself a little bit. I am not jumping in the pool anymore because it's too warm. Mm. Ambient temperature is a little warm. And I thought... you can get so much out of punishing yourself just a little bit. Jocko probably takes it to extremes. I do it just a little bit. But I don't know when we started to run from that. It's not serving us well, and I'm glad you're here to talk about it.
Self-punishment can go a long way sometimes.
I've found that folks need to push themselves.
This music that you just put on is punishing, actually. I don't even know what that was.
The more you know.
Let's talk about the book. I'm glad you gave a couple to my kids because, boy, do they need this book.
Sure, it'll be read right away.
That's a waste of my time.
The first thing I'm amazed about is watching my soon-to-turn 11-year-old son and his 11-year-old buddies all hanging around and playing nice all day long. And I'm like, why have you not wrestled those kids to the ground? That's all we did, is get people in headlocks. All we did was one big headlock. If you were standing there and not paying attention, someone came up behind you, got in a headlock, and then tried to throw you on the ground. Absolutely. They don't touch each other.
That's very strange. They should be attacking each other pretty much throughout the day at random times.
I agree, like the Pink Panther. I agree. I mean, didn't you spend your formative years just wrestling with your buddies?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a... It's how you establish the pecking order, right?
Who do you know who the alpha male is? Yeah. Who's the alpha silverback?
Exactly.
I never even thought of this, but then we'll get into the book. My number one pastime in high school is I had a friend named Tom.
Okay.
This guy was built like a brick house, and he got like best physique back when they would give out best physique. It was funny. He was black. And he was our only rich friend. His dad was a hand surgeon.
Defying all stereotypes.
Yes. And he thus had a swimming pool. None of us had a swimming pool. He also had a diving board in his big swimming pool that just extended into the over the pool like 6-7 feet.
And he swam in the pool?
Brian.
How dare you?
I'm just asking for the listeners.
We would spend every summer night, you would stand at the end of the diving board and you'd get in your position. And then him or Ray or my buddy Chris, the other strong guys, would try to throw you off the diving board, and whoever got thrown off got to be in the catbird seat for the next fight.
For the King of the Hill kind of thing.
All we did was fight on this diving board. That's all we did. There was nothing else to do, and it was wildly gratifying, and everyone enjoyed it, and everyone was sort of equal in their own way and had their own strengths and weaknesses, and we just go at it. And if anyone won 3 in a row, it was a huge, huge deal. But those days are gone, right, Jocko?
They certainly seem to be disappearing a little bit. Although the other day I walked down to the beach where my son was down there. My son's 14. When I walked down there, he was in a full-on brawl with some other kid, friend of his. They, you know, a friendly fight, but they were smearing sand into each other's ears and pretty much beating the crap out of each other. So I was impressed.
I'm trying to think of... Yes, Brian.
The harbinger of your story, just back to that, on the diving board and all that stuff. Diving boards can't build them anymore.
Nope.
At least here in California.
Yeah.
That's a indicator.
That's so insane that there's no diving board.
Also, not to take a turn for the gay, but I think we were naked, but it couldn't get any straighter than what we were doing. Being naked made it straighter, like sort of Roman days.
Yeah, like sometimes it gets
now,
so
me having
gay,
a boner obviously crossed into a different territory.
Well, that's your affair.
That's a mitigating
that's me,
factor.
But the rest of the guys... It was Colosseum battling. Yeah, so...
Sometimes it's so gay, it comes around to heterosexuality.
Very true. Yeah. Like chaps. Mm-hmm. All right, so the book. Let's talk about the book, and thank you for signing it to my son. I appreciate it. Let's talk about what's in the book and why my son needs to read this book.
So, a book is about a kid. He's in fifth grade, and he's got some issues going on. He can't do any pull-ups, so he's getting called out for not being able to do any pull-ups. He doesn't know his times tables. which sucks when you're in fifth grade because you're supposed to know your time tables. He doesn't know how to swim, and he's getting picked on by Kenny Williamson, the school bully. And so it's the book starts out last day of school, and all those things kind of collapse down on him at the same time. And he's really bummed out, goes behind the library, he's crying, he goes home. And when he gets home, he remembers, his mom reminds him, that his uncle is coming to stay with him for the summer. His uncle was in the SEAL teams and is now getting out of the SEAL teams, and he's going to go to college. But for the summer, he's going to stay with his sister and with his nephew. So that's Uncle Jake. And so they start talking and hanging out. And Uncle Jake says, you know, what are you going to do tomorrow? You're going to go for a swim? You want to go play some basketball? What do you want to do? And the kid, whose name is Mark, you know, says, well, actually, I can't swim and I can't play sports and I'm not good at anything. I can't do any pull-ups. So he breaks down, starts crying. And his Uncle Jake says, wait a second. So you don't know your time tables. You don't know how to swim. You can't do any pull-ups and you're getting picked on. Those are your issues. He says, yeah, you know, it's horrible. He says, it's not horrible. We can fix all those things. And so they spend the summer training, working out, learning how to fight, learning how to study, studying the time tables and learning how to swim. And that's what the story is about.
Awesome.
Was the book your idea?
The book was my idea, yes.
And I'm guessing not to just make a couple of bucks or sell a few units, but to fill some sort of void that we're heading toward as a society, which I've been complaining about for a long time now.
Well, absolutely. You know, with my first book that came out was called Extreme Ownership. It was a book about leadership. And that book was focused, obviously, for adults. And a lot of people along the way were saying, it'd be really good if we had these kind of lessons for kids. And that what kind of got me started on it. Another thing that got me started on was that I had four kids of my own. I have three girls and one boy. And I was out trying to get a book for my son. And this was years ago. Just trying to get a good book for my son. For him to read. About, you know, boy things. And so I got him this pirate book. Right?
Right.
Pick pirates on the cover. And I'm thinking, cool. You know, pirates are going to go out, break things, destroy ships, take over countries, whatever. Just get after it. And, of course, I open the book and I start reading it to him. And these are the most pathetic, embarrassing pirates you've ever seen that are talking about sharing and how we want to be equal. And I just shut the book. I burned
it. Aboard, everyone, get on the Rainbow Warrior now. There's a Japanese whaler. Let's head it off.
Exactly.
Socialist pirates.
All these books that are telling kids, you know, that, well, you don't want to be strong and you don't want to work hard and you don't want to push your personal ability any further. You just want to sit back and allow, you know, the collective to take care of you. And so that was another thing that made me write the book.
Well, I have this notion now, and I'll apply it to males, which is, so we have this thing that we always talk about, this like shrinking middle class. You know, we have the very poor people, and then we have the very rich people, and this chasm seems to be growing larger. I don't know if it's a talking point, if it's actually happening, but I'm just assuming it does feel like we're creating like two separate Americas, rich America and poor America. And I'm now thinking about this in terms of dudes. I think we're going to have super studs that never stop training in the octagon, and then super pussy man purse. You've invaded my personal space. I felt, you know, I got my coexist bumper sticker on my Prius. We're just going to have a class of super puss and super dude.
What are you talking about?
Yes, sorry, Sonny. Get in the Prius, put the sticker on the bumper, and make your way to your Primal Scream Therapy encounter group. I think the powers that be are going to create more. This is my thought about why MMA is the fastest growing sport, because we need this outlet because we're sitting in air conditioning on our ergonomically sculpted chairs. I think there's going to be a group of extreme dudes that are out just doing all those tough mudder things and all the octagon and MMA stuff and training super ultra hard and, you know, jumping off an iceberg into freezing water, and then just the super panic pussy dudes. And I think the middle class, which was like, hey, a dude could pull the spark plugs out of his Chevy and put some new plugs in. He wasn't going to rebuild the transmission, but if it broke down, he could pull off the side of the road and check a few things. He wasn't a prize fighter, but he could handle himself if somebody was hitting on his old lady or whatever it was. Like, there was a sort of, he could change a spare on his car. He could drive a stick, you know. He wasn't a master mechanic or journeyman carpenter, but he knew how to get the sticky window unstuck in the house. Like, there was a sort of mid-ground.
There was a minimum standard for being a man.
those are out the window now, and I feel like all we're going to have is Super Puss and Extreme Dude.
You know, though, in my
good
opinion,
superhero group.
Yes.
I think that the Extreme group is going to grow because I think it's very instinctual for boys to be drawn towards this, and I think you actually have to work to pull them away from fighting, right? Like you said, when we were kids, you just scrap. That was just the way it was. Yeah. Oh, you want a piece of my candy? You can't have it. Okay, we're going to fight. You know, that's it. Oh, you right. want to borrow my pen? You can't have it. Now we're going to fight. That's very instinctual for boys, and I think we've been trying to pull them away from it. And I think if we open up that door a little bit, boys will be boys.
Well, we decided, and I've talked to Dr. Drew about this for a million years, we decided that basically there was the sort of feminine route and there was the masculine route, and that the feminine route was the route to progress. So masculine was
more evolved.
Yeah, caveman, hair pulling, fighting, you know, settling stuff with our fists. That was us. That was, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And now the evolved move is this way.
You can talk about your problems as opposed to fighting about it.
Yeah, or anything. Just there's a sort of feminine route and a masculine route, and we were going to do the Massengale route versus the brute route. Ooh, I like that. Yeah. Write that down by Fabergé. So we decided, oh, it's more evolved. This is more evolved. And yeah, at a certain point, it was like, hey, guys shouldn't be having fist fights on the property at the open house at the school because the one dad's giving the other dad the stink eye. Like, I get it. And if you want to have sex with a woman, you're not allowed to get her in a headlock and drag her into a cave. You have to give her roofies like Bill Cosby.
Yeah. There's a process.
Isn't it? We're evolving is what I'm saying. No, they were right to a point, but then they started crossing over, and it's sort of like PETA. PETA's like, you know, 25 years ago, hey, those chickens should be kept in a humane condition. They're living off their own fecal matter and scratching each other to death. And you go, all right, I don't like that. They should be free range or something. And someone would go, well, what do you think? Oh, I'll pay an extra buck for a chicken if it's not being tortured. Why not? I'm an atheist, but who cares? Now you're wearing faux suede and they're throwing paint on you at the movie premiere, and they've crossed into a weird area that doesn't make sense to us anymore. I think we can all agree with animals not being tortured, but they start crossing over into some area that doesn't make sense. And I feel like we're doing that with this whole feminine masculine thing. We can't even do he and she anymore. We don't have separate bathrooms. It's just this whole thing, and it's all going if it toggled between the masculine and the feminine, I'd be fine. Be like, all right, we'll give you, all right, so we'll have one bathroom that everyone will use. All right, that's yours. And I like to take a leak on my front lawn, speaking of bathroom, without any prying eyes or repercussions.
And how?
Okay, that's ours. Okay, but it didn't. It just went all feminine all the way, all the time, and it's not helping us.
Now, I have a notion / question, and maybe it's unanswerable, but Jocko, I'm interested in your take on this, because what you guys are talking about all applies to boys for the most part. I have an 8-month-old daughter, and I can't speak to, you know, books that are for boys, pirates and things like that, or whatever books are aimed for boys. But I do know that when we had, you know, Christy had her showers, people would get us gifts, we had a lot of books for girls, and a lot of those books, the vast majority, if not all of them, were very much empowering. You know, like you
can do anything.
You can do anything. You know, almost masculinizing the girl part. So it's almost like, do you think as the male gets a little more feminine, the feminine's getting a little more male? Does that make sense? Because I'm kind of dealing with a thought that I'm having here for the first time.
Can I just say that off the top of my head, it sounds like as the masculine gets more feminine, the feminine gets more condescending? Oh, I can't do anything? Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't realize there was an option. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I actually have, like I said, three girls and one boy. And the first kid that read the book was my 7-year-old daughter when she was 6 years old. And the thing is, the problems that are addressed in the book, they're not just boy problems. They're problems for everyone. And if you think girls don't get picked on and girls don't bully each other, they're savage, straight up, even worse than boys in some cases, because they don't just do the physical. You know, if you and me throw down over a piece of candy, that's cool. We're done in 15 seconds. We split the candy and it's all good. Girls, you know, they can hold a grudge and they'll do the psychological warfare on each other. It gets really crazy. But the book isn't really necessarily written just for boys. Mm-hmm. It's written for kids because kids have issues. And what the book is about, you know, it's not necessarily about a kid that can't do pull-ups. It's about a kid that can't do something. Mm-hmm. You pick that thing. How do you get better at that thing? Well, the way you get better at it is you have to work at it. And every example in that book comes from raising my own kids. For instance, my oldest daughter, she didn't know her times tables when she was in, you know, third grade or whatever it was. And she actually thought she was stupid. You know, she came home. She was sad. You know, I'm dumb. I'm not as smart as the other kids. And I said, well, why do you think that? She said, well, I don't know my times tables. And I said, well, you know, how much have you studied them? And she says, what do you mean? And she didn't even know. It didn't occur to her that you had to study. She just sat there in class when they went over them and thought she was supposed to know them. And I said, no, actually, you need to make flashcards. Here's how you do that. And now you need to study them. And in an hour, she knew her times tables. So boom, problem solved. And that's one of the things that, goes on in the book. But kids these days, they just think they should know everything, or they no one teaches them how to learn, or no one teaches them, hey, if you want to be able to do pull-ups, guess what? You got to do some kind of working out over the summer. You just don't get naturally gifted to be able to do pull-ups. That's the way it works.
The thing that always bothers me now about this new world order is we have this new thing where we just explain to all girls they're beautiful. So whatever your shape, whatever your size, whatever you are, you are beautiful.
Which was setting up for the Gina Grads of the world.
Thank absolutely. You got to go D cup plus, man. I don't care what grade you're in. Why are we instead of deciding everyone is beautiful, which is insane because everyone knows who's beautiful and who's not beautiful, we'll decide. We'll figure it out. You can't foist that upon guys. There is this bizarre misunderstanding that comes from women and the far left, which is we can make you feel a certain way about things if we hit you hard enough with shame. No, you cannot. You cannot explain to us what's beautiful. Our cock and balls will decide what's beautiful, and it'll never change. It'll never change, and you can't get us to change.
But can I just ask, yes, what about like different decades? If you, you know, they do sketches of like the most beautiful figure of the, you know, 1820s and the most beautiful figure of the 1920s.
My dick and balls are here now.
I was gonna say, the body types are very different.
I wouldn't say
one's zoftig, one's boyish.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, the Sophia Loren will never go out of style. Just ever, whatever, mm-hmm, whatever category you're in. And yeah, there's trends, and I put on a couple of pounds. But by I will tell you, no guy I know ever signed off on the waif model
on Twiggy.
We did not. We did not.
Kate Moss.
We did not. That was something that gay fashion designers were trying to foist on us. We didn't sign off on that. We wanted some bosom and some hips. So this thing where it's like, well, you used to like bosom and hip, and now you don't. No, yes, we do. We don't want the 13-year-old boy with the B cup or the A cup. We never said, I never signed off on that. I never knew any dude who signed off on it. That was you trying to graft your shit on us. It never takes. It never works. You should spend time in more fruitful ways. So this notion that we're going to come around or be evolved or understand, no. We'll do stuff like gay marriage and pot, where we just go, all right, look, I'm tired of arguing about it. You want to smoke pot, smoke pot. You want to marry dude, I'll be over here. And we'll pretend to care, but that's about as far as we go with stuff. But your version of what we're attracted to, never.
Doesn't change.
Never going to work. So I would suggest that we stop calling everyone beautiful and get off the subject of beautiful. Why does everyone need to be beautiful? It's a weird thing because you're sort of, you're kind of sort of punching a hole in your own ship when you say, no, she's not beautiful. Everybody is beautiful. Stop using the word beautiful. Let's focus on the mind. Yeah. Let's focus on ability. Yeah, this sort of thing's like everyone can do everything they want to do, and we're all beautiful. Like, stop focusing on the aesthetic. You're coming back to this aesthetic all the time. If you really want to be true to it, drop the aesthetic and just go, look, my idea of beauty is you going out and starting a company or running something or doing whatever you want to do in life. We don't have to keep circling back to the aesthetic.
Brian, Tessa's fine.
Thank you.
That's right.
She's good enough.
I'll tell her that in 10 years.
Yeah, she's a five.
We can all agree.
Go.
All right, yes.
Question, you talk about, you know, you have four kids and three girls, and it sounds like you parent them fairly similarly. You don't say, you know, one way for the boy and one way for the girls. Do you have a rule that they have to be participating in things? Does that only go for the boy? How important is it that they don't kind of make their own schedule, sit around if they want, that kind of thing?
Well, there's a definite balance you have to take there, because anytime you try and force people to do anything, they're going to resent it, and they're going to rebel against it. So you can't just impose things on people. And it goes with, from a leadership perspective, if I've got people that work for me and all I do is impose on them how they're going to do everything, sure, they'll do it for the paycheck, but they're out looking for another job. And it's the same thing.
Hi, Gary.
It's the same thing with your kids. If you're imposing what you want your kids to do, then eventually they go, you know, I don't like doing this. But if you say, hey, look, this is why you're doing it. This is why I want you to do this, because it's going to make you physically fit, because it's going to make you able to defend yourself, because it's going to make your mind work better, because it's going to make you do better in school, and that's going to give you more options in life, and that's why I want you to do this. And you explain to people why they're doing it and explain to your kids why you want them to do it, then they will be more apt to actually follow through with what it is you want them to do. I mean, think about it. All kids, you order them to do something, and they don't like it. And it's not just kids. It's anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not because I said so. You actually give them a reason.
You have to give them a reason why. It's just like being a leadership, just like being a leader in the SEAL teams. You can't just order, you go charge that machine gun nest and everyone's just going to do it. No, actually, they won't do it. You have people that say, hey, boss, that's not happening. We're not going to go die running this machine gun nest. We want to figure out a different plan. And if your attitude is, no, I told you to do it. Well, this is why in Vietnam, guys got, you know, officers got fragged and killed by their men. Because they said, no, we're not doing that. Whereas if you say, okay, well, what's your plan? This is our objective. Why don't you come up with a good solution on how we can overcome that? And then the team says, okay, we can do that. And then they come up with their own plan. And now when they execute the plan, it's their plan, not your plan.
They're more invested in it.
And they're more invested in it. They own the plan themselves. People ask me all the time, how do you get people to take ownership of a plan? You let them come up with a plan. Then they get ownership of it, and then they execute it. Same thing with your kids.
Wow. The great Jimmy Kimmel once told me that. 25 years ago. It's like, if you want to do something around here at K-Rock, you got to make Kevin Weatherly, the program director, think it was his idea.
Absolutely.
And if he thinks it's his idea, you can get it done. If you come in and go, this is my idea and we need to do it, it's probably not going to get done. But if you say, I love that idea.
Hey, Kevin,
we were
I was thinking
about
a thing you mentioned the other day.
Which one refreshed me?
Blow Adam for VW Beetle competition we're talking about with Kevin and Bean?
Fine, I'll do it.
Right. I thought about it. And I really...
Initially, I was hesitant.
Now I'm on board. And as you know, no one receives oral like me. I don't claim to give it. But no one receives better than me. And there's a lot of, Brian, impressive. You've been around long enough to know there's been a lot of guys who've challenged that. But I say bring it.
They've thrown their hat in the ring. Throwing the Jimmy hat in the ring.
I say bring it.
Yep.
Now,
not
performing oral.
That's right.
Receiving.
Yeah, it's an important distinction.
We do have a live show coming up.
Nobody. Well, okay. Want to test? Dennis Prager's going to be out there. All right. We got to test it. We'll test it. I'm saying nobody receives, right? I'm not bragging about my ability.
Feels like you're bragging.
Only to receive.
Feels like you're bragging. Mm. I'm not bragging if you can back it up.
That's right. All right. Get ready with the news, shall you, Gina Grad?
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Kathy Griffin says she may have gone too far this time. The sometimes shocking comedian posted a photo of her holding up a bloody replica of the head of President Donald Trump. Kathy attempted to defend herself by explaining the intent of the photo on Twitter, saying, quote, I do not condone any violence by my fans or anyone ever. I'm merely mocking the mocker in chief. But with the heat on her, Kathy took to Twitter again to apologize. In a 30-second video, she said, I beg you for your forgiveness. I went too far. Here's the video.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Kathy Griffin. I sincerely apologize. I am just now seeing the reaction of these images. I'm a comic. I cross the line. I move the line. Then I cross it. I went way too far. The image is too disturbing. I understand how it offends people. It wasn't funny. I get it. I've made a lot of mistakes in my career. I will continue. I ask your forgiveness, taking down the image, going to ask the photographer to take down the image, and I beg for your forgiveness. I went too far. I made a mistake, and I was wrong.
All right. I know Kathy. I've known Kathy for a long time. I met her at the Groundlings, God, probably in the mid to late 80s.
Was she a groundling?
No, she's just whoring around and working the lobby.
Yep.
No, groupie. Yeah, she was a groundling.
I just thought she was straight up stand up. I didn't know she had improv background.
No. She's actually, I guess she's done what a lot of us have done, which is we didn't start out as stand ups. You just realize me or Joel McHale or Kathy Griffin, where you go, hey, you can go out on the road and make some money if you can do stand up. And you go, well, I can do stand up. I just never did stand. I wasn't a stand up. Improv group, whatever, and you put together a stand-up act, and you do stand-up, and then at some point you become a stand-up because that's what you've been doing for 10 years.
Right.
But Kathy started as an actress, improvisational actor, and I don't think she ever did stand-up. We never discussed stand-up. I started off doing stand-up, but realized I like sketch and improv better, and then got back to stand-up later on. Anyway. Go to parties at her little apartment and stuff. It's like a little group of people. And then later on, she had some success, and I had some success. I'd go to her Christmas party and stuff every year. She's a nice person who's a little bit disturbed, I would say. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the sense, I don't mean that in a super pejorative way. I just mean she's had difficulties in her past, like from her childhood. Okay. Like, I don't know how much of it is common knowledge and how much of it is just stuff I know, so I'll not go too far out on a limb here, but she's been victimized a time or two, and I think a lot of that is kind of bubbling up to the surface now as she's getting older and more is coming to the surface, so to speak. She was a mellower and sort of fun loving, you know, sort of jovial,
right.
not, you know, I think I've always had this sort of theory that women start getting nuttier and guys get mellower as they get older. Like all the guys I know from high school that were douchebags, that were scary, that would punch people and get drunk and punch cops and stuff are now these like balding, you know, guys with the belly on them, and they're totally even mellow now. And some of them are even sort of repentant, like, hey man, sorry about high school. I know it must have been rough. Like, I feel bad. They're just mellowed out, and the women are sort of going berserk a little bit. Yeah. I don't know what that is. It's probably a little testosterone starts wearing off, and then it starts kicking into menopause and whatever. So she's a good person who's a troubled person, and I don't know if these things are like attempts at just getting clicks, like everyone's trying to be outrageous.
That was my question. Is there any context for this, Gina? Do you know what it was for, a magazine cover?
I don't actually, Gary. I don't know if you know, but I think it was just a picture that a photographer posted online.
I saw that it was part of a photo shoot, but I don't think it was for anything.
Do you have, just for frame reference in here, do you have the picture?
And I have other thoughts, which is I don't like what we've become from a decorum standpoint. To me, the president is someone you can agree with or disagree with, but they're the president.
Right.
Like, I was on Dennis Prager's show this morning, and I said, I don't want to see the president give a press conference in sweatpants and a Hawaiian shirt. That'd be weird, right?
You don't want him to go full atchet.
You just don't want... You're right. You can get rid of the picture, by the way. It's nauseating, but... Yeah. I don't want to see the president that way, but the same way I don't like flying Southwest and seeing guys wearing a wife beater or tank top that says bad to the bone on it with two angry and super weird muscular pit bulls drawn together on it. Like, I feel like we're on a flight, put a shirt on. Like, also, you got your weird bare upper arm and it's slopping into my seat, and now we're making skin contact with each other. Like, just certain things.
Yeah.
We jumped the shark to me with the 1994, I found out today, Bill Clinton candidate, boxers or briefs.
Oh, yeah.
You don't answer that question. You're going to be the president. That's not for 19-year-olds to ask you.
I feel like that was earlier.
It was an MTV town hall.
When I was just sort of vamping on Prager, I said late 80s, early 90s, and the guy got back to me in my ear and said 94.
He may have had bad information because there wasn't an election that year, 92 or 96, and he was already office by 96. So
I don't know why.
You're going to get somebody fired, Brian.
This is my biggest problem. I'm sitting there with my, you know.
Maybe it was a middle of his term thing, but that doesn't sound right.
I'm combing through my sort of, I've been concussed at least seven times
by,
in my life.
By Ray alone, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's the booze, and I'm going through it, and someone's saying to my ear something that sounds, but they have a computer.
Yeah, so they must know.
April 94.
Wow.
Now you're doing what I was doing to myself.
The funny thing about this picture,
I don't know what it was, but the point is 19-year-olds asking the president what kind of underpants he wears should have been met with a next question.
How dare you?
Just next. We're not here. We're here to discuss policy, not underpants. And at that point, these guys had to start, and I don't like it. I want them to be. Ben, I don't like weird tweets in the middle of the night either. You leave the president alone and he leaves us alone. He wears a suit. He acts like a president. And the burning in effigy that we used to see in like Iran with Jimmy Carter and stuff and Reagan and all throughout the years, we're now seeing it's not stateside and it's being done by comedians, which is weird, right?
Yes. And that's the funny thing about this that everyone is laughing at is that this has brought PC culture and the sort of right wing community together. Because the politically correct among us won't allow this. This is horrific. And the conservatives are saying, what are you doing? This is the president.
Well, to me, it's sort of like, do you want your kids to see this or be a part of this or experience this or not? And if the answer is definitely no, then that counts for mommy and daddy, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. I don't want to see a journalist beheaded by ISIS, and I don't want my kids to see it. I don't want my kids to see this, and I don't really feel like seeing it. Yeah. And if it's a joke gone wrong, or even a joke that didn't land or whatever, I understand that. I don't want to sound like a hypocrite. I'm looking for where the comedy, it needs to at least start with a joke and then end with everyone's offended.
I believe the caption was when Trump was referring to Megyn Kelly saying blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever. I think that was sort of how this was captioned by Kathy. That was the sort of logic that she was going with.
Oh, well,
I'm not saying it's
very
hilarious.
Timely. Yeah. Does she have a Lusitania joke chambered for us as well? Like that's
where I think she was going.
That window was open for about 28 hours after the comment.
But
now
doesn't this
kind of
happen because with social media, there's no filter. There's no producer that's going, you know what? That's not something we should really be doing. Let's put that one back in the box over there. Instead, she just click, I'll take the picture and put it up. Boom.
I feel like there needs to be somebody. I always say this about the saying from UPS, what can Brown do for you? Somebody should have raised their hand at that boardroom and went, people, hold on before we're going to start making billboards.
Yep.
We're going to launch a multi-million dollar cable and network campaign.
Well,
we're buying a spot in the Super Bowl. Hold on 1 second before we get too far down the road here. First off, Brown reminds me of poop. And what can poop do for you? Well, nothing. Really? So let's just think of something else like UPS, always on time, or we're number one, or just a big red, white, and blue thumbs up, or anything, but what can Brown do for you? But yet they roll it out. And when they're putting the ketchup all over the head of the Trump dummy, somebody's got to step out and go, sweetie,
what are you doing?
I don't feel like this is going to be received with quite the reception that you're probably anticipating. Yeah.
Now, how do you feel about her big mea culpa?
That's just what we force people to do now, because if they don't, they're pariahs. I think I always like to just sort of stand by it, go even further with it. I don't think it's going to hurt her live audience.
That's her
crowd.
That's,
I feel like
question.
That's an attempt to get back to New Year's Eve on CNN.
With Anderson,
and that's not going to work.
Do you guys think her base is okay with this, or in any way affected?
I believe she's already lost an endorsement, if that matters.
I'm more.
Oh, no.
I think there's a semi-ironic part because, you know, Trump, whatever outrageous / controversial stuff he does that a lot of the people are freaked out about, his base is like, great, more, keep it up.
That's true.
And in a weird, ironic way, I think the only people who are okay with this are her, like, hardcore fans.
I read that the Satanists actually came out against her on this.
No, we did not.
You know,
I mean, no,
up.
They did not. Look, you go to a couple of meetings, you become a Satanist. That's
say
all
Hail
saying.
Satan a few times.
I'm say in Santeria public. People, not Satan.
Sign off every
totally,
podcast.
Oh, well, it's a very, well, it's a somewhat different, it's a marginally different religion.
They run parallel.
There are a lot of parallels.
Similarities.
Yes. I don't think her base, in terms of a live concert sort of venue thing, would have, As a matter of fact, I believe the next time you see her live, there's going to be 13 minutes on this.
I think you're right.
Standing out.
You're right.
Question. Does the name Mary Kay Letourneau ring a bell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Yeah.
She is back in the news. Jock, I'll fill you in. 2 decades after an infamous sex scandal.
They're still
scandal,
together, right?
Hold on. Wait for it.
Yeah.
Decades after an infamous sex scandal threw them into the national spotlight, Mary Kay Letourneau and husband Willy Fallau are separating.
Mm.
Now,
Fallau, how many years?
I'll get there. I'm getting there. Fallau, he's now 33, requested to legally separate from his 55-year-old wife and former sixth-grade teacher.
Ooh.
On May 9th, according to the court documents. The two married in May of 2005 in Washington State after Letourneau completed her 7-year prison sentence. She was 34, a mother of 4, and she started her relations with Fallau when he was 12. The relationship came to light when she became pregnant with their first child. She gave birth to their second while in prison. So Willy is done, and I believe they have 2 teenage daughters together.
Well, I'm going to have to have the uncomfortable conversation with Lynette I did after Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck broke up, mm-hmm. which is, hey, if it happened to them, it could happen to anybody, and that includes us.
We're not safe.
Yeah. I mean, I have to have this conversation. It's uncomfortable, but let it be known.
It's understood.
I thought these two would go on forever.
You thought this was going to last.
Well, in a weird way, I feel like they're maybe more committed than any of us ever, dream of being. Like, I'll just go to jail for a few years. When I come out, we'll get it on again, and then I'll go back to jail. Like,
good point.
So there's that.
Should the records be expunged if you get married for instead of how many years were they together?
Oh, God. Well 12 to 33.
Let's play. If you're together for a decade or more after, like, shouldn't, I was like, all right, I guess you guys really are in love.
You think she gets a mulligan?
She may.
Yeah, I do. They got married for 10, 2 kids together. They're obviously in love.
I think the person
it wasn't
that,
just for kicks.
It's, you know, I always say this. You know, they have those commercials, Jocko, for, like, you know, the woman's she's walking the mountain bike. I don't know why she's not riding it. I don't think they could get a steady cam going, but they're walking the mountain bike through the sequoias, and she's like, "I have herpes, and the medication it helps me." And we go, "Well, I feel bad for that actress or that chick, but the guy's really getting it is the boyfriend." Because he has to sit there and look concerned and understanding and not judgmental in any way.
In a way.
But it's clear that she didn't get the herpes from him. It was the guy with the huge wide cock who gave her the super thrashing without the condom before she met this dude. But he has to still look concerned. You know what I mean? And the real person we should all be concerned about is her husband with the 4 kids.
Oh, sure. From before.
Yeah.
That guy. I mean, look, we feel, okay, Kathy Griffin's going to be rough when she goes back to wherever she goes back to. But this guy's showing up to work the next day.
We cut to the job interview. Joe Letourneau. Where do I know that name from? Did we go to high school together?
No. You're thinking of Joe Pop. You're thinking of
Joe Paterno.
Paterno.
Oh, yeah,
Paterno. Not Sandusky.
It's a similar sound. No. That was a tragic
right.
Scandal.
Hey.
Hey.
Can we talk about 401k and benefits?
Sure, Mr. Letourneau. I swear I got that name from somewhere.
Jack Lambert. Jack Splatt. Great. Undersized, but boy, overachiever, boy.
I was more of a Raiders fan, so that's a tough era for me personally. But anyway, 401k, offer comprehensive matching. Did you used to live on Maple?
You know what? It was named after a tree or a bar. I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah. Just call me JJ.
JJ.
Mm-hmm.
Letourneau.
Just call me JJ.
JJ.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, I'm going to move to Alaska.
Short interview.
I think the guy moved to Alaska.
Wow.
That's what Alaska's for.
That in the Florida Keys.
Cuckolded husbands.
Yeah, you got to move to Alaska or the Keys.
Yeah.
Gary, if that guy moved to Alaska. I swear to God, he moved to Alaska because that's what it's there for.
We cut to the bar in Alaska. You got it bad.
Yeah.
Now, if something tells me Jocko wouldn't abide by one of your children shacking up with a 34-year-old?
No, not happening.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Just checking.
Not happening.
Yeah.
So now they finally...
That's sad.
They're done. Oh, they're going to separate
available?
Ways.
Was there a live show in Seattle anytime soon? Just saying. I'm a guest.
There's some interest.
All right. Keep going.
Yeah, see, the look that you just got on your face is the look that I'm thinking this whole time. Like, this whole story.
Does this still go on, Lord. Or was this just part of a rash of years where it was, like, in the news? Like, remember, the motorcycle chick and... who's caught posing on a motorcycle.
Yes, the blonde out of Florida or something. Yeah, I think guys sit around in the newsroom and they go, all right, what do you guys want to do? All right, you want to do teachers having sex with students? What's going to be the next rash of? Because it's not going to be one story. It's got to be a whole bunch of stories. Oh, hey, boss, pit bull attacks. It's been a while.
Hey, we had a good run of those for 6-7 years.
I miss freeway shootings. Okay.
Well, all right.
You want to do freeway shootings? What else? Whatever it's going to have a year of this.
Uh-huh.
And even if it's not a freeway shooting, whatever it is, we'll turn it into a freeway shooting. Mm-hmm. So we can do, pit bull attacks.
Yeah.
Shark attacks.
Zoo animals attacking children.
Oh, well, let's call that a rampage.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, let's go on a rampage.
A rich guy is on safari shooting lions.
That's good, but it doesn't have a sexual content
to
it.
That's a good point, yeah.
So why don't we just go with the teachers having sex?
Shouldn't overthink this.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jocko, my ultimate...
Deborah LaFave?
Yeah.
Is that her name?
Yeah. Okay. That was one of them.
Wow, Brian.
There's been a few.
Really wanted to meet her.
Really in that Rolodex.
My whole thing is when we, do that thing where it's like she would invite her 15 and 16 year old students back to her apartment and they'd have sex parties and they would videotape it and she'd make them, she'd take cactus coolers and put vodka in it and, you know, stuff like that. It's like, first off, that sounds like the greatest weekday ever when I was 15 and a half. But I've always just said, when they throw the guy up on the stand and they're breaking it down and all the horrible things and he's holding back the tears and the prosecutor's yelling, we should throw her away, this is rape, lock her up, throw away the key, blah, blah, blah. I just have one simple question to the victim. Have you ever beat off to this crime? And if the answer is yes, then we're all going home.
It's victimless.
It's victimless. Because if you're beating off to this crime that was perpetrated upon you, then it is not a crime. Or sign me up for this crime. No one has been shanked at an ATM and beat off to it. No Korean liquor store owner has ever been mugged behind the counter and beat off to it. But I guarantee these 16-year-olds from Florida are probably beating off to it this day. Because you don't know how guys are wired. That's in the spank bank. And that's at the front of the queue.
That's right.
Gary, did we find out?
Every article just references that he's worked for Alaskan Airlines for 32 years. So maybe that's what you were thinking.
Hey,
he's in Alaska.
Where's the headquarters?
Yeah. He's in Alaska. Juno.
Right.
Makes sense.
Some pictures of Deborah.
You called it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to a report in the New York Post, more and more rich guys who spend time vacationing in the Hamptons are getting vasectomies, so women looking to settle down can't trap them by getting pregnant. These guys who want to have fun over the summer believe they've been lied to by women who claim they're on the pill when they're actually not on the pill. Women who attempt this get that they're in line for 18 to 20 years of child support if they pull it off. And since the guys are rich, those would be some big checks, sometimes in the six figures. So everybody's getting their vasectomy before the Hamptons.
We found out that Cromartie had the DB for the Jets.
Antonio Cromartie, yeah.
Yeah, had the vasectomy and it didn't work, right?
Yeah, but you were supposed to refrain from sex for like 3 months, so maybe they didn't do that.
Mm. Yeah, but we also did the math that he had it and had a kid even before that or after that or whatever it was. So
combining these two stories, I'm shocked that more athletes like in their prime, like before the draft, aren't getting this done. Like just banking months of, because this is a strategy, you know, the girls in the lobbies and hotels.
They weren't, you can't get a vasectomy if you don't have any kids and you're under 30 and you're single and stuff.
Really?
Well, they'll say the doc. Well, back in the day, the doctors would say, "Do you have kids?" You go, "No." "Are you married?" Like, "No." "Are you 24?" "Yes." "I'm not giving you a vasectomy."
Well, they're urethra shaming.
I would imagine if the smart thing to do would be bank months worth of sperm so you could have kids someday when you wanted to. If you're Lonzo Ball, you know, or whoever, and you're going to be number one draft pick, then you know, get your tubes tied and have fun. Enjoy your 20s.
I concur, but I think that's very
pragmatic. A little bit of foresight.
Yeah, I'd rather spend that money on tattoos. I think jewelry is what you're going to hear. And Gary, you can look into it, but they were very reluctant to give you a vasectomy if you didn't already have a brood of kids and were of a certain age.
I believe I heard recently that most doctors make you go through a couple of counseling sessions if you're under a certain age. I believe it was like 30 or 35. If you have no kids, they want you to sit with some therapist or some kind of counselor that they pick.
Yeah.
You know.
Unless you can prove you're gay. And that only takes about 8 minutes. If the doctor certified and willing to come along with it. I got to tell you, I would be tickled pink and the height of flattered if I ever found a chick pulling my spent condom out of the trash can while I was shaving in the next room. Like, I first part of me would be like, you money grubbing whore. And the next would be, oh, God bless you. Look at you.
I needed that.
Look at you grabbing that windsock full of jizz and scurrying off to the garage. I'm so, I want to be angry with you, but I can't.
It's too cute.
God bless you. Look at you.
Remember what Lycus used to say to do?
No.
Oh, you got to pour hot sauce on that, dear. He'd say go in the trash can and pour hot sauce all over your condom so she doesn't try to put it back in.
Yeah, I feel like, first off, I don't even like...
You've been carrying that bottle of hot sauce around since we're at the restaurant.
I just like it on my fries.
Well, what goes on when the maid wants to know why all the Tabasco's in the can and off the head in the master suite? Mm-hmm. You're like, and by the way...
She's cleaning the sheets. She must have been a virgin. Wait a minute.
Weird
Conti.
Cocktail sauce mess that's in that thing now. Like, I feel like it's a weird long conversation. Yeah. Now you're attracting rodents. You're begging a skunk to come into your house or a raccoon or at least kind of like fire ants.
Yeah. Sure.
We all know the story. The guy threw the spent condom in the trash by the bedroom and then doused it with hot sauce and then was consumed by fire ants in his sleep. I mean, it's like right out of the Bible.
But, time,
sure. Yeah, right. So I feel like...
There's a better way.
Maybe just flush it down the toilet.
Yeah.
And save yourself some hot sauce.
Very good. All right. Good point, yeah.
Maybe that's why Hillary's keeping it in her purse.
She does travel with it.
Yeah, now we know the real reason.
She's following Bill around.
Yeah. I thought it was just... I was pissed when I thought it was to impress black folk. Now I'm really angry.
I'm actually upset.
Now I'm really angry.
When I was retired Navy SEAL, Jocko Willink. And a little bit of news from 2017 as well.
I had a better Twitter bio. Mine said Drifter for Hire, following the Great Magnet since 1996. I had two references in there. Corolla.
I love that. I know that's your Twitter bio. I actually really like
it. He always wanted to hire a drifter to murder people he didn't like. That was my favorite running jokes is. In addition to Atheist Robot Serial Killer. Those are two of my favorites of things he used to say.
Well, you should keep changing them every once in a while, because I always...
I don't have access anymore. I'll change my Instagram profile.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Speaking of Instagram, why don't you give us a follow at Giovanni Giorgio or at Chris Loxamana 1 and slide in our DMs. Let us know what you want to hear on Corolla Classics, because we do take requests.
Now, there's a list of several hundred requests people have of dating back over a year, some of them, but none get prioritized. It's whatever I can find first.
Yeah.
So if you throw in a request, you're not going to have to wait necessarily if I can find it. But there are so many episodes.
It's in the hopper, and we really appreciate everybody reaching out and letting us know their favorite moments. Because
the virtual COVID safe hopper.
Yeah, that's right, of course. Now let's get going with our final clip, another song. And this one features Glenn Phillips, famously of Toad the Wet Sprocket. And he was telling stories about knowing Ben Folds. I mean, they're good friends. And
this song that he's in play is inspired by a story that Ben told him. He reveals. So just like the Freddie Johnson episode, you get a little bit of talking about the song and like how it came to be. And Mike Dawson's actually producing this one, so it's Adam with Dawson in the booth talking. And Dawson actually suggests he plays this song because he thinks Adam will like it.
Love it.
And it's a great performance. It's a really good song. And it's Adam Carolla's show. 396 Glenn Phillips. It's from September of 2010. So this is after they switched formats, but sometimes they would still, like they do now, they'd still do some one-on-ones, and that's what this is. Live in studio with a song inspired by Ben Folds. Drive By.
So, but I think Adam will like.
I think Adam
you
will
want
like
to drive by?
Okay, yeah. Drive By.
It's a good song. One of my favorite Glenn.
I wrote this about a friend. It's kind of true, but mostly not. So. I was the driver for the drive-by of the neighbor's dog. Dad had always said it him, and he said, come on, son, get into the Vega now. I'll go get my shotgun. It was a military holiday, and kids were everywhere. I hid behind the steering wheel and tried to disappear. Tried to speak but couldn't. Dad was whistling and drinking beer. And I pray, dear God, if you save this dog, I will never get high, I will never jack off, I will do all the things that I should, but if not, I'll be a good boy from now on. We turned around the corner soon and saw the neighbor's yard. Dad lit up a cigarette, rolled his window down and grinning like an idiot, stuck his head and body out. And I prayed, dear God, if you save this dog, I will never get high, I will never jack off, I will be all the things that I should but not. I'll be a good boy from now on, I'll be a good boy from now on. Well, he popped in a shell, took aim with the gun, then a flash and a bang, the dog, it was gone. He jumped up and it ran away. Dad shot right through his chain. Dad said, take me to the dairy freeze, I wanna have a shake. We sipped him on the benches there and stared out on the lake. And Dad has never said another word about that day. And I hope you're not disappointed, God, 'cause I still get high, still jack off. And you knew I was lying, but you still saved that dog. You're such a good God. Yeah, you're such a good, good God. I say hallelujah. Well, I'll be a good boy from now on.
Beautiful. Glenn Phillips. Glenn, where... What inspired that song? Is it was sort of based on a friend?
Actually, a friend of mine who was grown up in the Carolinas, and his dad took him out when he was like had his learner's permit when he was 15 to drive the father to get rid of a local pesty animal.
Wheelman.
Yes, Wheelman.
Wow, that used to be a gig up there with Second Story Man. for some reason.
It was a scary little thing. It was actually Ben Folds. He told me this story, and then I'm like, "That's a song." I can't write it.
Oh, really?
Can't write it. Freak out my dad. So now I've ruined it, and Dad will find out. But
love me some Ben Folds.
He's awesome, and he's in town actually.
He is.
Yes.
God damn it, Dawson! Why couldn't you have grown up next to Ben Folds? Jesus.
I'll work on it for you. But he told me the story, and it's like, that man, that's a good song. And he wouldn't, he's like, no, too close to home, wouldn't write it. I have no idea what the details were, but the basic setup was a 15-year-old.
Ben Folds.
As the wheelman for his father's.
Ben Folds, well, as a matter of fact, I can see why you guys enjoy each other and probably enjoy each other's work, because it's not really like looking into the mirror, but into at least a cookie sheet that's pretty shiny.
He's like me if I didn't give a shit, you know, which I really like. I mean, he's...
Yeah, but no, I mean, both really smart lyrics and tell really interesting stories that don't have... You know, I shouldn't say, I don't want to say about nothing, but what I mean is you take a little kernel of a nothing, you know, something, you're not singing about earthquakes that crush cities. You take little slices of life and make really interesting layered stories about them. But melodically, you guys, very rich and very textured and lots of sound coming from what doesn't feel like all that much. I mean, it's not like Chicago or something. They have big horn sections behind you and everything, and... Ben Folds, yeah, that guy. Funny. Oh,
he's
good
great.
Sense of humor.
He just came out with an album that's all Nick Hornby wrote all the lyrics for.
Oh, really?
Yeah
he does so. That stuff. He did that thing with Shatner, mm-hmm. right? Which was really interesting.
Yeah.
Must has be been. Fun just to... he must not be into drugs or cars.
He is not into drugs or cars.
Yeah.
Clean living.
Yeah.
First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. You work hard enough. How about you do a little bundle? Bundle with Geico. Make it easy to bundle the homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got enough to do. You're busy these days. Save a bunch of money. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you visit geico.com and get to bundling.
And that was Adam listening to Glenn Phillips, one of his favorite musicians, playing a song that was inspired by another one of Adam's favorite musicians, Ben Folds. Crazy.
Who was also impersonated by one of Adam's favorite people.
So Adam loves music. Like, I know everybody has their opinions on Adam's taste, but he is...
They're great taste. He's a genius.
He's a lover of...
Adam and Drew from Loveline, from the guests and everything, have introduced me to more music than anything else in the world, but then also just Adam talking. And he got me into John Hyatt and a bunch of other people. And I actually like more John Hyatt than he does. Like, he's never listened to the 2005 album I've tried to get him to listen to, Master of Disaster. And, like, John Hyatt's, like crushing it in 2005. And so I think people don't really explore the musical taste of Adam. So if people criticize them, I think it's more of ignorance rather than actually going and checking some of this stuff out.
Yeah, I know it's no Beastie Boys, but Adam is a huge fan of music. I've been to a few concerts with him, and he even taught me a concert move. We were watching the Jayhawks in L.A., and we each had drinks in our hands. It was Dawson, Adam, and myself. And there's always that moment where after the band plays and you want to clap, you have a drink in your hand. So people like will hit their thigh, or they'll like kind of just kind of do an air clap, and they won't really make any noise. Adam, since they were plastic cups, he would put the cup into his mouth and hold it in his mouth so he can clap with both hands. And
I've seen him do that. Yeah, the bite down move.
I've been doing it ever since. So great move.
It works at concerts or when you're held in captivity.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, use your mouth a little bit more. All right, that'll do it for Cruella Classics. The Adam Carolla Show returns tomorrow, so make sure to tune in. We got a great week lined up.
I'm so pumped!
I'm pumped too, man. And Gio and I will be back next weekend, and we'll see you there. My name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get it on. 2021 style.